Yo, what's going on? Welcome. It is the Keeping the Grammy podcast, and we are coming to you not live, but recorded live in Mr. Poet's bachelor pad.
Sort of, kind of.
What's going on?
How are you, bro?
Well, it looks like a bachelor pad anyway.
It's just
There's a million crepes, and we just cleaned the Uber Eats off the table.
German done a kebab.
FIFA's on the TV in front of us now. So he's looking very bachelorish.
It's proper single, isn't it? It's fucking like I have got...
You look like you got uni in the morning. That's how you're living.
I swear to God, it looks like a fucking uni pad. I look lonely as hell, man.
Do you know what, bruv?
Yeah.
Like, when you hit uni age these days, man, like, we kind of, as men, we sort of just... We stall there, innit?
Yeah, 100%.
And then, like, you might have kids and it drags you up real quick. But other than that...
I think... I don't even see... But even like the way I live right now and the way I live my life is proper like when I was young. I was living differently before and thinking, oh, what's the appropriate way to live when you grow up? And then I just thought, I just want to have a good time.
Yeah.
I just genuinely have a good time. So it's just like my cousins come here, they're like 20 years old and they just feel comfortable because they're just like, well, you're not any different.
At home, yeah.
Yeah. They just
How old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
34.
34?
Yeah.
Getting on.
Bro, I'm old,
we're
man.
We're all getting on, man. All of us, old, we're all getting on.
I'm so old, bro.
Crazy. I'm staring down the barrel of 40. Not what? Far off.
No way.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Logan. You have been out here, bro.
I know. I was on Rinse FM in 2002.
Do you know, I always, when I have, like, one of my best memories of you is when Rewind done that CD, and I think you done Volume 2. And I can't remember the name of it, but I just remember... putting that on, and me and my brother always playing this damn CD. It was like the best grime mix at the time. You had Merkle Man on there.
So that was the first volume, I think it was.
Was that the first volume?
Yeah, it was Access All Artists.
Access All Artists. It was fucking sick. Black cover.
What was that music expo? Because it was given away at that music expo that they did in...
See, I didn't get it there. I stole it off my
floating.
Cousin.
It was floating
everywhere. It was like, in my end, definitely one of the most popular CDs. Everyone wanted it.
No one cares about mixtapes anymore.
Bro, I loved that mixtape so much. It had, man, I think I smoked too much, man.
I couldn't tell you what's on there.
Bro, it's Footsie again. So it had Boogeyman on there. It had the Boogeyman remix. It had When I'm Here remix. It had, there was like
Jamie
a Carla.
Jamie Sirius was on there.
The Akala remix was Rolling So Get Rolled Over was fucking sick. That was like towards the back end of it as well. There was like there was just so much tunes on there.
I just pinged in about 30 tunes on there. It was like a radio mix.
And it was so sick. And I proper kind of missed that way of giving music out because you get small dosages of each artist really, really quickly. But it's enough for you to go, I want more.
Yeah.
And the good thing about that CD was it was loads of different types of interpretations of grime. So it was like, I might gravitate to one style more than the other and then just completely listen to that and actually be alienated to what loads of people were doing. Like, well, the way Graham was back in the day anyway, like I was so in North London, I could tell you every Black the Ripper bar forever, but maybe I couldn't tell you like most of Footsie's popular bars because he was East and it was like mad territorial.
And there was these guys coming through from South at that time. Like, bro, Doctors coming through.
So then it was more about who's got the, like, bars are bars. And then it was like, who's got the best tune, though? And then if you had the best tune, then your man would kind of say, all right, cool, I'll listen to you on a set. Or which crew were making the most noise. So,
And then that was like the genesis of like the Channel U era as well. Because guys were just getting videos done and just putting them up there. And obviously that was very important for you as a young man.
I was mad.
Do you know what I remember as well? Like, mix CDs, actually, because it was a physical thing as well, like, you kind of attached memories to it.
100,
like,
bro.
You can remember what the artwork looked like. You remember having the CD in your car and all the things you did in your car with the CD.
100%.
Like, the brethren stealing the CD out of your car and arguing with him, whatever. We've all had that happen as well. But, like, when stuff's just digital or just a Spotify tune or whatever, it's kind of like take it or leave it and it's there forever. But, like, a physical thing, like, it's like it actually attaches memories to that physical thing. Like, I think it's really important. We kind of moved away from that in music.
We have. And it's like, I can't... This is what's so messed up for me. I don't know if... Because I have a comparison that I'm really upset with the way in which music is distributed today. If I had nothing to compare it to, maybe I would feel really, really happy about it, and then I would attach memories to this situation. But because I have something to compare it to, physical CDs, I'm just like, I really prefer the physical era. For obvious reasons as well, like, I've got, in my kitchen, I've got a bag of CDs within, like just loads of bags, and just full of CDs from back in the day, and I like that, and I go through them because I can think of memories of Carnival and so on and so forth. But I think there's probably like a 17 or 16 year old somewhere that has downloaded music at a certain time, or will go to the date on their iTunes when they downloaded it, and they can tell you everything about that day and why they downloaded it, or on Shazam where they were when they actually listened to that song. Like, they've got fresher ways of interpreting memories, and that means in 10 years time, when there's a new way of now getting music, they're going to be like, I prefer the iTunes era, and then we're going to be three generations deep. Like, now we prefer physical. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm just really old, or I don't know.
Do you know what? It's just different.
Yeah,
we have
bro,
to just
different.
Accept it's just different.
Very
that
different.
That whole, oh, it was better in my, that's tapped, man.
Yeah,
man.
Proper.
Then you got your parents, oh, but the, you know, the vinyl.
The vinyl.
Taking the record out of the thing and putting it in the bro. Needle down. And yeah, all right, cool. Yeah, and we're just looking at them like, whatever, CD.
Do you know what
CD's
I mean?
CD's much better.
MP3.
I can't have a record player in my car and all that. You know what I mean? And
it's
then, like,
crazy.
Kids are looking at you like, oh, CD, that's long. Like, I have everything on my phone. I can get it, like, my whole, every song ever made on my phone. Get it whenever I want.
It's the age of convenience, isn't it? The age of convenience. So it's just like, what's ever more convenient is what people are going to do. But I proper, like, I appreciate it to a certain extent, and I like it because I just think they're just finding, like, really new ways for you to enjoy yourself in various different ways. And I think if I take away the emotional attachment of how I enjoyed myself growing up and just look at the way you can enjoy yourself today, there's far more different ways to enjoy yourself, and especially expressing yourself as well. So I really do appreciate this era at the same time.
Like, I definitely find that fascinating to think about now that you said it. Like, me growing up, I have, like, I went out to clubs, so I remember tunes that I heard in the club, and they'll mean something to me because I remember being out raving to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there's kids now that don't go out.
That's
just
all.
Listen to stuff on their phone, and they're just in yard playing tunes, out on road playing tunes, in the car playing tunes, and they're not really raving. They just consume it like that. But they're creating, not really, because they're not sad. They're enjoying themselves. They're creating new memories in different ways. So for me, like, that's actually really interesting.
But the thing is, the only bad thing about that, and I think that is a negative thing, is because I think it's really, 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 really important to learn the ability to communicate face to face. I think that is a skill that is very undermined, and it's a skill that you're never ever told that you need to harness. The ability to communicate with all types of people in various different ways, and that builds understanding. A lot of my friends just live within this area and they have this frame of mind. So when they see people doing things, they judge it on based upon their experiences of one area. Mm. But if they just traveled a little bit more and met a little bit, you know, different people, then they would actually see that, no, people have their own reasons outside of your environment for doing what they do. And when in the digital age, the only bad thing is everyone has an agenda for talking to you. So if when I get messages, I imagine people have seen what I've done and they will try and talk to me on the hope that I will respond, and then they can build some type of relationship so they can get whatever it is they want out of me, whether that be social currency, whether that be me to help them to learn how to be present or whatever. They just were in that era of people are now looked at as assets, and people are looked at as what can you do for me, rather than when you used to go and rave, you kind of had an agenda, but you was in the environment long enough with that person to kind of see what they were like at the same time. So you might go and talk to a girl and she's nice, and then by the end of the night,
that was kind of your only agenda though, isn't it? Like, your only agenda was like, I'm gonna go out and try and draw girls, not I'm going to go and talk to that person because, like, I wonder what he can do for me.
Do you understand where I'm coming from? You kind of appreciated the aesthetic of someone, and then through the conversation, it was a compromise of, do I want to continue to talk to this person? And you could see them for what they were in real life. Now you got catfishes and all types of things. So
I don't
like,
know anything about you until I speak to you and find out. Like, nowadays, I can go, okay, who's this person? Let me look up their profile. It will tell me what they do, who they work for. Let me look on their timeline. I can see what they're doing, what they're on. So before I've even sent you a tweet, let alone spoken to you in real life, I can know better about you. I can watch your stories, follow you on Instagram, see what you had for lunch.
It's too much,
like,
man.
I've not had a conversation with you yet. But it's like you said, back in the day, you're starting from scratch and you're actually... But again, it's convenience. Like,
it's convenience.
You're like, you sidestep that. And it's just different, I guess. It's just different. It's not better or worse.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Because you've grown up with it, it's probably worse because you appreciate only speaking because, to people honestly yeah. with no preconceptions. But
because I've seen more dangerous things happening from establishing relationships online for the simple fact that some people online create a way of communicating which is kind of general, and it's so general it just means that they can talk to an online community in that way, and the online community understands the language of it, so they understand what they're trying to get or so on and so forth. But when you speak to somebody in real life, you can really just be in tune with their energy more than anything else. Yeah. You can just see the way they say certain things, and online things can get misquoted, and maybe I've typed something and you look at it a certain way, but you don't really know me, and I'm just shouting in this big room and you're just going, oh, poet said this and he means it like that. But if I said it in front of you, you would fully know how I meant it. And I think that's the reasons why I don't like this whole beating people online thing, is because I just don't feel like...
We'll definitely talk about that, because we have a lot to talk about with regards to how we present ourselves online and have done and what have you. But yeah, I want to continue to sort of just set up a little bit about your history as well, because obviously everyone will have seen you doing all manner of content, whether it's online, TV, all over the place. The presenting is flying. You're moggling up the place now as well.
Thank you.
Polo and the kids.
Yeah, it's crazy. That was crazy.
But yeah, I said Channel U.
You and
Scribs were making music. How long ago was that? Because dates mean nothing to me anymore.
That's probably like 2008, my bro. 2005, 2006, we started
MCing. Yeah.
And
when did you drop the bait video that you got?
Never Gonna Blow.
Yeah.
That was 2008, 2009. I remember we were trying everything to just get name, going to sets, going to Heat FM, but there was just too many bigger groups that were in there that were just more popular than us, whether it would be Kids in the Hood. It was scary as fuck. They were in there. I remember I was fascinated by Bex Winter, so when I used to see go to a set of Heat FM or wherever I went and I saw Bex, I was just like, oh man, how are we gonna be able to take the mic off him? He's gonna get reloaded every single second. And yeah, we then found Channel U, or Channel U sort of found us, and there was a guy called Sesan, and we'd done a song called Never Gonna Blow, or we didn't actually have a name for it, like our friends called it Never Gonna Blow, and we put it out and it became popular within Tottenham. So in Tottenham it was a really popular song. And
so how did you put it out
on MSN? So we got it, and
that's
that's crazy.
How did you put it out? I just sent it to a couple of my contacts online on MSN. That's MSN Messenger for people that were born after 2002.
Bro, it was so sick, and we begged everyone to make it in their name.
Yeah,
if they were listening to it. So obviously, if you were listening to a song, you would hear it.
You'd see it. In your status.
We was like, everyone, can we all listen to this song at the same time? So if you go to your people that are online, everyone will be listening to the same song. And then everyone in, if you've got shared around Tottenham College, and they're like, that's when the gram scene was proper growing in
Bluetooth era.
So everyone was sending it around. So now in Tottenham, everyone kind of knows the song. So now when we go certain radio stations like Axe FM and all of that, when Scorch is in there or when Black Ripper's in there, there was kind of a little bit of oh, I know who they are. Not enough respect.
And you've got something that you can say on the mic where it's
you can get a response.
You're not going to get air. Yeah.
It was so nice.
I know that one. It's you guys that done that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was man would... Obviously, we came across mad corny and shit, but it was just when we done the video, obviously, but that was just because we proper wanted to separate ourselves from the era of grime that happened before us, that we saw grow from East London, because it was proper gritty, and we just weren't like that. I was a youth worker.
Yeah.
My cousin was in university working a part-time job as well, John Lewis, if he doesn't mind me saying. It's too late, I said it now. So, we just couldn't go down that era of grime, because we didn't epitomize that, and we respected it, but we just felt that we could make our own interpretation, which you could still respect the craft of it. So we used to study Getz and Kane religiously. I would go to my friend's house in East London just so I could pick up the radio station in East London to listen to them, just because they were that good. And or I'd get my friend to to tape the set, and I would get the cassette tape, and we'd play it back, and we'd be like, whoa man, this is mad. I remember one set, it was Kano was on it. Guess what's on that one? It was Kane, it was Footsie, it was D Double, it was Esco. Bruv, it was a mad set. And I was just like...
It's like a Monday night deja.
It was Monday night deja. Yeah. And the bro, the set's online now. Like, it's like they got like a 7-minute extract from it.
Yeah.
And... Oh, it's Kano in the house. I'm just trying to make dough in the house. And I'm just like, Jesus, like, how can we do this? And bro, I can't lie. Like, I'll be honest with you. Like, Getz and Kane proper inspired me.
When
and my
when I think of you,
yeah,
I think of your appreciation for Getz. Like,
I love that guy.
I've never ever seen you speak about Grime and not hail up G, because
he's just, they used to say, like, we idolize this guy, man. Yeah. Like, I can't lie to you, man, idolize that guy. And I remember going to Walthamstow one time, I met him for the first time. Jesus fucking Christ, bro. I remember like it was yesterday, bro. It was like a Wednesday afternoon, proper clear blue sky. We were sat inside, like, there was just like this place in Walthamstow that he went to. It was like a youth center. You walked in, right hand side. I was sat inside there waiting for Colin. Colin was upstairs. Colin Batstar from Meridian.
Jeez, man, like Colin.
Yeah, okay. So I remember like, oh, and he was like, oh, sorry, I've got someone upstairs. So we knew that he was with Grim, and like Grim was killing it. And
was Colin looking after Devs?
Devlin at the time as well.
I think he was like, he just started managing Devs.
Just starting.
Yeah,
so and he kind of had a dream team. Like Louis White was there. So Louis White was like a dope producer, engineer. Devlin was just like Eminem at the time of the country. Getz was just this raw energy. And anywhere he was, I was just like, bro, I just want to be like this guy, bro. And then he came downstairs.
What sort of era are we talking? What year is this? Like 06, 07 kind of times? Or
this would have been... No, because
earlier.
This was later, because like that I met Getz like much later on, because
after 08
we dropped Never Gonna Blow, because that's when Colin met me in like Wood Green. He just handed me his card and he was like, I think you're good. And I was like, who the hell is this guy?
So this is after
we dropped the video,
like,
on
this is after like Movement Boy Better Know kind of
era. We've already been studying
so Getz is well established as a recording artist. He's not just that set you're probably talking about is like 03, 04,
that
kinda
was time ago.
Yeah, Deja,
time ago.
Spraying, he's fresh out of jail.
Fresh,
roll deep in a ringer. Fuck it, times. Like he's just
clashing with Bashir.
He's on everyone's neck. Yeah, he's on everyone's neck. Like 9, 10, he's making songs. He's making projects. Like he's proper. 5, 6 projects deep.
Deep.
As well.
Yeah. So like by that time, you not only have the appreciation, because I've gone on a journey with Getz that he doesn't even know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like go breaking my neck to go to East London just so I can listen to this guy, and then. Then, like, arguing with my friend, in Leon Wilson, shout out Leon, in Ferry Lane. We used to argue every day, who's better, Getz or Kane? And then in the end, because it's like Ronaldo or Messi, like, you just have your preference, just appreciate them both, because really and truly, they're absolutely killing it, because we just dying for any one of them to take the mic anyway. So, yeah, by them times, Getz is, like, already done the movement stuff. Ah, oh, it's crazy. Like, I think when I got with Colin, he had just dropped I Make the Girl Them Sing For Me. So... Yeah. I'm listening to that song. Then they done the remix, and then they shot the remix, and it was icy, and Kano was in the video. They shot it like in the next country. I was just like, so I'm in awe of everything. So when Getz comes down the stairs, he doesn't even know what he looks like to me. That's like,
he's got an aura around him, like
bro.
Super Saiyan, yellow glow around him, powered up.
And the best thing I can say about this guy is people will say, oh, don't meet the person that you like proper, like you look up to and all of that. This guy was mad cool. He was like, yeah, man, we know who you are. I know who you are. I rate you lot still. Bro. Because, like, fam, at that moment, I could have cried. I was so happy. But I just had to keep it cool, pretend that it didn't mean anything. And then he busts out. Safe. Yeah, safe, my bro. Thank you. But then maybe I wasn't even trying to keep it cool. Maybe I was just, like, raw. Like, that is ghetto, fam. Like, that's actually ghetto. And he actually has seen me. So, bro, man, that was a mad time. And then that whole era was a roller coaster in itself anyway. But it was really, really cool era. Really, really cool era.
So that's actually quite a way into the lifespan of grime. A lot of genres don't even last that long to get to like 5, 6, 7 years deep.
At all.
Come and go. They get burned out by the industry, the mainstream. People just move on past the sound as a listener. But, you know, I'd say like, bruv, I saw a tweet today that Bizzle made. Shows you when this was recorded. But I saw a tweet today that Bizzle made. He said, I'm playing Freshers tonight. At this, I can't remember. I think it's Leicester.
Mm-hmm.
Freshers. Yeah. Some of the kids that we're playing to tonight were born in 2001, the year that I made Morphy Crew Oi. And I was like, fucking
Jesus
hell,
Christ.
Like, that's longevity, man.
It's when you have to appreciate people like that. Like, I remember when he dropped Oi.
Yeah.
And
2001, I was actually going through this the other day with someone for a different project. Like, the speed of change in the music in 2001 is ridiculous.
Ridiculous, my bro.
Like, the tone and the what was going on. Like, from cheesy two-step, I'll bring you flowers kind of garage and everything, like Yates's, Weatherspoons across the country, proper cheese fest. And then you've got, oh, wait a minute, like, so solid, cool, they're a different thing. Then there's next ones coming through. So the point, you've got kids like More Fire Crew, like teenagers making this music, there's actually no rules.
Bro, there was no rules in that. Shout out to Specs. There was absolutely no rules in the arrangement of Oi. And the video was gritty. And yeah, they had Avrex's on.
Yeah.
And they had like a VSU jeans. Like, I looked at mad these three guys. Mad oversized
tracksuit bottoms.
Mad. I said, these guys are the latest guys I know. Then I heard that, like, I lived in Ferry Lane at the time. Yeah. Then I heard they were from Walthamstow. I was like, oh my God, these guys are from down the road. Then I'm seeing them on Top of the Pops. And it was like, the one thing I have to give them so much credit for is, we didn't see anybody like that on television. Nope. There was nobody that had that swag that I could go and
so
see.
So Solid looked icy. Like, So Solid looked like superstars.
They were gone.
I'll give So Solid credit of people in the end saw them and like, yeah, like I want to be that.
100%.
One day I want to get there. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I'll go on a journey and I'll get there and it's quite far away.
I still want to be
Fire Crew, More Fire Crew looked like your brethrens. Bro, but they were on Top of the Pops.
And I just respected it so, because it's almost like they didn't compromise any part of their process. And I think that's real bravery, because it was like the world that they were going into was so, so pop. There was no element of anything road at the time that they could have potentially compromised at some
everything
capacity.
Was getting locked off, by bro, the way. Like, so locked, also man. Solid events were getting closed down. Romeo's yeah, birthday bash, all that stuff was going on. Like, So Solid had to do a turn and move into like the hip hop kind of polished sound, yeah, like from their first album to their second album. Of course. Very different. And it's all getting closed off. So that's just very honest music. Like, yeah, what they were making with More Fire Crew, Oi, and the stuff that followed it, it shows you like the power of it, because the music that they're making, the tracks that were being made at that time in like 2001. We're making it with no thought that it's going to go any further than the pirate studio that you're playing it in.
None. Yeah,
and it shows you how powerful those records were, that it took them from a little box room studio in Walthamstow to big Top of the Pops.
Bro, people don't understand.
Zero compromise.
Zero. Oi is literally one of the most genius songs of all time. And people think I'm being very serious with you. It's the ability for you to marriage the way in which you speak. You have a greeting, which is a very hood greeting. It's a very working class greeting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oi, it's like, it's almost disrespectful, but if you know them, you give it a blie.
Yeah.
And you've now incorporated that into being like a chorus sort of, and then everyone does it, but everyone has a different way of then speaking after the oi. So oi is almost to get your attention and then listen to who I am. And it's just like, bro, like, was you not even aware of what you were doing? You were saying, oi, let me introduce myself. Oi, let me introduce myself. Oi, let me introduce... And it's just like, wait, but that's a song now. So now you've introduced yourself on your first tune to who you are, to the world, but you've done it exactly how you would do it on road.
Yeah.
There's no compromise for that. That song is fucking genius. And it's just like, for me, that's when I'm like, bro, that's the music at any point in your life you have to be making. Like, that was an entry point into the world that them three men lived in East London, in Walthamstow. Like... Yeah. There was an entry point in there. The video didn't compromise. Like,
nope. Because it was all being made with the full focus on the immediate area. Like, there was no consideration for, are this record's going to be a mainstream hit? Is this going to get radio playlist? Is the video going to get playlist? Can I perform this at this festival? None of that shit existed. Oi came out the studio, Chubby Dread Studio, Platinum 45, pressed up on White Label. It got signed up to... FTL, I can't remember who ran that record label, on a blue ting, on the blue label. Master Steps, I remember beating that record out all over the place. Obviously, it's getting hammered on all the pirate stations as well. Yeah, like Mac 10's clattering it, Diesel's banging it out everywhere, Carnage is playing it, Slimsy's playing it. It's getting played by all the authentic spots, and it's so big that it's like, it's just working its way up the steps. Organically every time, because everyone hears it, like you said, it's such an accessible thing.
Yeah,
I love the fact that Oi kind of, it marries that the intimidation of like the working class Black Britain, like along with the friendliness.
Yeah.
Like you don't know how to take it sometimes.
You don't have a clue. Like when you hear oi, in my mind,
and if it, meant to be if rude. You're walking on the street and you're looking this way and you hear oi behind you, you don't know what that means.
Bro, I'm running. Before I've even turned around, I've made up my mind. Where are we? Oi, I'm out. I don't need to hear oi. But they had the ability to do that and almost make it so friendly, your mum might sing along to it.
Yeah.
Like that is genius. And to think, and it just again goes on my point. I always talk about in Halfcast how I think slang is literally one of the most genius things that's ever been done in life. The ability to have an English language and say, do you know what? I'm going to break this and mold it into what I want and communicate, but I can still understand you, but you won't understand me. To do that sonically, that's a whole nother skill now.
Yeah.
And I don't think people really appreciate what Morphe had done with that song. It was the ability to sonically give you a world. That was almost Top Boy before Top Boy. Like you just watch that video, it gives you an insight into the world in the hood, like in East London. Like I wouldn't want to go there. I would watch that video and I've made up my mind. I have no business being there. That is still that's sick. Like how did you present that world to me? Like there's bikes. Nah, bro, they're lit. Them three guys are legends, bro. Like, no matter what, them three men are legends, bro. Proper.
I think, you know, every now and then you get those tracks that come along and they just completely, they manage to package the culture, but not intentionally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, here's the culture and I'm going to present it to you and you can actually understand it now. I think German Whip's one of those as
100%.
Where, like, that's just how people talk.
100.
You know, it's not forced. He made that at a time, Dan made that at a time when you're not really trying to make records for the mainstream, for the playlist, blah, blah, blah. Just made a record. And again, it had the slang in there. It just, it that's just a conversation on a record. It's just a conversation on a record. Same way that OA could be a conversation between people, but it's structured and it's on a record. German Whip done the same thing. And you have them records that they bust the culture and they make people want to find out more and hear more and listen more and take in more.
They remind me of, what's that show on television? Is it called Planet Earth or whatever?
Yeah.
Where they just go around to different parts of the world. And like
National Geographic type of thing, where it's like you're discovering new places.
Now, I just feel like if there was the hood version of that, or it would have been one of them programs, because it literally had a person that didn't have that walk of life so engaged to the point where in which they might sing along to it. They might want to watch the video. When it comes on Channel U, they might even request it. But they absolutely know nothing about that way of living. Yeah. And I just think the ability for you to do that and give a message to somebody who doesn't understand what you're saying, but they still engage with it, is an absolute gift that shouldn't be underappreciated. People make music every day, like every day, and so a lot of songs do not work. So if a song connects, it connects for a reason. And especially when it's a song from that time, it's adolescence, it's young. Now we have to make songs to prove that we deserve to be here. Not like intentionally in our heart, but just like in terms of financial gain, like in the business side of it, you got to prove and quantify that you can be here. That song is one of the songs that broke through to try and help man them even be able to make songs to go through to the commercial world now. Like that was the start of it. And I just think, Jesus Christ, man, what a beautiful start. Like what a beautiful start. And if any artist ever thinks to themselves, like, shit, like, why do I do this? And how can I sort of make my music so people can understand? I would say go down to the right start. Like, go watch Oi. Like, watch a video like Oi. That will definitely show you how you can potentially make it in the world. Don't compromise yourself, man. Like, be who you are. Be proud of it.
Yeah, man.
Proper love that. I love that, man.
Yeah, I didn't expect to be talking about OA for half an hour, but
sorry, bro.
That's what I'm here for, bro. I don't do interviews. This podcast is not about interviews.
Okay.
It's about me talking to interesting people and my brethren about whatever the fuck comes up.
Yeah, I respect that.
Because the framework of this podcast, and obviously you understand because you do content as well, the framework of what I want to do with this podcast is very narrow. Like, it's Keeping It Grimy podcast. So I can speak to a couple of people that aren't grime artists. Yourself, I spoke to Austin the other day.
Yeah, good person.
You know,
to speak to.
But they're all it's all with relation to, you know, the grime scene and the history of grime and what's going on in the culture and all that stuff. But like, if I do a back interview with you, and so you started out in and then this happened, and like I can't come back and do another. I can't sit down with you again because I've done that. Whereas if I'm sitting down having conversations.
You can have loads of
talk about whatever.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and that's kind of the same thing. Like, you know, you started your new thing with Vooch.
Yeah.
Where you're speaking to legends, exciting people in football. Just again, it's kind of just generally around the culture of football, right?
Yeah. Well, we're gonna try and make it more lifestyle based because okay. we feel like, yeah, like that's the way forward. That's what we want.
But like, do. I'm sure you would love to sit down with Ian again.
Yeah, we're going to.
Yeah, so be a part two. You can exactly because yeah. it's just a conversational thing, and yet, you know, today we're going to talk about something else. Last time we talked about that, today we're going to talk about this.
Exactly.
Chat with Uncle Ian and see what we can say.
That's mad. Yeah, we're going to his house this time.
This is the big invite. When are you going to Rio's yard? Because yeah,
that's he invited us for that podcast. To be fair, but he's so far. It starts here in the kitchen, mate. So I just said to him, we had a little conversation about it, and I just said to him, look, man. I am a working class kid. I don't even see myself, even though I made a million. I always dreamt of having a big mansion, but it's just not me, man. It's proper not me. I think I'd forget myself.
Well, the amount of cleaning that you do in this place, I don't know how you manage to upkeep a mansion still.
Bro, no way. Like
Rio's definitely got cleaners, bro.
100%. Yeah. 100%. The house he's got is crisp.
Bro, he's got wham as well, by the way. His arms are mad.
I respect him, man, because he's a man that just says, you know what, this is what I want to do, and he dedicates himself to it, and he's willing to make sacrifices, and one of them was his health. And
The only person I've seen get hencher than that is Craig David.
Bro.
That do you remember that picture when we saw Craig David after like 5 years on the beach?
Bro. That broke.
Looking like muscle.
Craig David
muscle
don't understand. and I was making jokes about it, and some people got upset, but I love Craig David. Like, I love Craig David. He's the latest. He's been the latest. But Craig, like, bro, you was with us. You were skinny. It was like me, you, Joel Santana, like the light-skinned skinny guys. We were so in. Then you just disappeared, went Miami, came back hench. You didn't fit your jeans jackets anymore. These times, type one was lit. He bust me on type one. I was like, oh my God, I need to get a type one jeans suit. He just looked lit all the time. And then he just becomes bare wedge. And I was just like talking about, this is the girl that I want with Kano. It broke my heart, bro. That was like one of the most hurtful moments in my life for light skin.
What are you saying? Yeah, he let the team down.
Bro, like
deepest
the amount
anime betrayals.
I gassed up that song before I heard it. I was so hurt.
That tune was hard still.
I didn't like it, man.
No?
Nah, bro. But that's because I just...
I'm not a man that really likes commercial joints, you know me.
No, I didn't
but
like
I
it.
Like that. I thought Kane and Craig managed to do Kane and Craig on a record that sounded good and was like acceptable to a wider audience as well.
For me, it was like, I know why I love Kano. So like maybe that song wasn't for me. So that's what I have to appreciate sometimes as
Are
well.
Are you the type of Don that skips Brown Eyes when it comes
no,
to an album?
No, Brown Eyes is... Listen, that song. Oh my God, okay. But I don't want to fall in love. Listen, Kano's the latest fan. He's him and Getz and Skepta.
How good is Kano's new album, bro?
Bro, it's a joke, bro.
Kano's new album, I think that's his best work ever.
Bro, honestly. Do you know what? I'd have to go and listen. I'd have to have a home sweet home moment again.
Yeah.
Because he has some good bodies of work. One body of work that I really liked that I don't know if everyone liked, but I really liked it was 140 Graham Street.
Bro,
like,
Rich, please.
Jesus Christ,
can
bro.
Can you please put 140 Graham Street
Jesus Christ,
on
bro.
iTunes and Spotify, please?
I've got a physical copy of it.
That's the only way to
copy,
get it.
Yeah, like I've somewhere in my but it's downloaded on my computer, so I've got it for life.
You're
I don't
saved,
mind that.
You're all right.
But I remember when I first heard Hunting. I remember I was with Colin.
Mad.
And Colin's like, "Po, I've got this new song, Getz and Kane." I'm like, "Pardon?" But he knew that was what would trigger me.
Yeah.
By the time I've heard the whistle and heard Getz come in, convict like Acorn, I said, "Scrap it. This is what I love, bro." Like, Kano's just, Kano and Getz, man. Jesus Christ. And then they're back-to-back with D-Double on the hook, like... That music genuinely makes me want to cry. I know it sounds mad stupid, but it makes me want to cry. That's how I want to hear Kano. That's how I want to hear Getz. And it doesn't mean that's the best interpretation of them. That's just my favourite. I just like
that. For me, Kano's one of the best spitters. I'm not even going to get into the recording artist conversation. Kano's one of the best spitters in the history of this country ever. So whenever I hear Kano spraying on a tune, I'm happy.
On Hunting, he went mad.
I'm happy when I hear him when I hear him shelling down a tune, I'm very happy. But his latest album, the artistry, the subject matter, the quality of execution, because you can talk about a lot of those subject matters and do it in a real corny way.
not Kano.
You can do it in a way that like it feels very forced, and you're just trying to touch all the bases and, you know, take advantage of the zeitgeist at the moment, and everyone was, oh yeah, knife crime's a thing at the moment, and, you know, austerity and blah, and oh yeah, I need to get on top of that, and let me cash in on that and talk about these. The way that I feel Kano is one of the best storytellers as well.
Kano's just one of the best humans, bro. Like, I don't even know the guy, so it's crazy that I'm saying that, but I've invested so much time into his life just purely off the back of admiring his gift, bro. Like he's so, so talented. Like, and I don't think he's appreciated the way he should be appreciated.
I spoke with Zoo recently. I don't know if you've seen the episode that I did with Zoo.
No, I haven't.
So Zoo mentioned in a tweet recently that, like, he feels that people like Kano and Getz, and he specified that he didn't just mean Kano and Getz.
Yeah.
But people like Kano and Getz could do more by co-signing younger artists coming through. And when you look at Kano, Kano's kind of like dizzy in the fact that they were there at the very, very start, very young, like 15, 16 years old, had very, very successful first albums, and then kind of existed as satellites orbiting around the scene. Like, they're not about, they come back round and bless us with music, and then they orbit in off again. And they're not like around and part of it. And I feel like Kano, I very rarely see. But what do you think about that in terms of them being a bit more involved? Getz is obviously a bit more regular, but Kane, I'm of the opinion that, like, I'm just happy to just let him be an artist, man. Like, I don't feel he owes anything to people to do that. But I can see where younger artists like Zoo are coming from, where for them to give them, like, when you met Getz and he said, yeah, I know about you, man. That, but on a wider platform, like, how much power that would have for some of these artists coming through, these younger artists.
My mum has literally done everything in her power for me. She's done everything in her power for me. She's compromised who she is. She looks after my kids like they're her own sometimes, when they're here, sorry. There gets a point in your life where I'd say to my mum, chill out now, my girl. Like, fall back, mum. Like, you've done so much. Like, I'm not asking you for nothing no more. I can honestly tell you, I've interviewed Kano a few times, but I can honestly tell you, without knowing that person, him and Getz have done more for me than certain family members. They've done so much for me.
In what way?
In a way where,
like, indirectly as inspiration, or
they're just young black men from, like, a similar walk of life to me, and they've had more reasons, and not excuses, because I feel like you can have various excuses, but more time you have one reason. They've had more reason to give up and to stop doing music and stop doing any of this shit than any new member of this new generation being introduced to grime or to music today. They've had so many reasons to give up. Real life reasons that when you leave a radio, this shit still exists. When you've dropped your album, this shit still exists. They've had so much reasons to give up. If they don't want to fucking come out their house and they want to stay there, after everything you've given us, no problem, bro. No fucking problem. Because Kano is so hot, Getz is so hot, that they're still relevant today. Do you know how hard you have to work? Do you know how much you have to care about your craft for you to still be relevant and spoken about and be interesting today? Kano's in the fucking new Top Boy. Kano just dropped a new project. If you want help from Kano and Getz,
and we're having a discussion that this project that he's dropped is one of the best he's ever done, still now. And Home Sweet Home came out 15 years ago.
But I will say, I understand where the younger generation are coming from, because I felt the same way. But I only felt the same way due to my lack of life experience. And then when you've done I've done a long time in YouTube. If I ever get to the point where I want to stop, bro, I'm done. I will be done, because I feel like I've made a decent enough contribution to this to be able to say that people are building careers off things that I've laid down. That's enough for me to say I'm done now, mate. If I've changed people's lives in that capacity, I've done more than I even expected or even wanted to do in the first place. And I'm telling telling you, like, Kano changed my life. Mm. Gets changed my life. That's not, I'm not saying it because, like, they're hot. I'm saying it from my heart, fam. Proper. I love them, man, fam. They are so incredible, bro. So many reasons to stop. Gets going prison. The comparisons to him and Kano back in the day, like, as a young man, that will hurt, fam. Like, people trying to say, oh, you're just a shit. Kane's like...
Angry Kano was the discussion, like, wasn't it?
My man's still here, bro.
I remember... I don't know if you went to it, but when Getz did his last album, he did the talk with Akala, which is actually online. You can find it online now.
Yeah.
He sat down and spoke about with Akala, and he spoke about how close he was to quitting music entirely. Like, he tried to get a job doing, I think, medical deliveries or something. He told the story, and yeah, you can find this. It's a really, really insightful interview with Akala. They sat down and spoke about it, but he said, yeah, I did the project. It was more of an artistic project. I did it kind of for me, which is, I feel like you should always do that, but yeah, it didn't really get the pickup that I was hoping it was going to get. The shows weren't coming in because the tracks were not like that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Then he linked up with Rootkid randomly to go with Relentless Studio, as you recall, and made a couple of tracks. One of them was One Take, and things started flying off again. So, yeah, man, like, you have to respect that. I've said on this very podcast a number of episodes, it's kind of getting a bit cheesy now, but, like, the only way you can really fail is by giving up.
Well, that's 100% true, and... The reason why that interview, I can never really watch it all the way through. It's very overwhelming for me. He brings up me in his story, in his interview. And people don't even understand what that means to me, bro. Like, that man changed my life, bro. For a man to even say, Poet done something to contribute to his story.
You done something to contribute to him not quitting music.
But, bro, that's, he's helped
that,
me,
imagine
though.
That. You did something to contribute to get not quitting music.
That's ridiculous, bro. Like, I should just quit now, bro. I swear to God, like, that man don't even know how they've changed. The F Radio set, the birthday set, part 3.
Yeah.
Me and my brother played that. It was like an hour long. We played that all day. All day. We heard about it through the grapevine. And I've never wanted to hear something so much in my life. And... he doesn't even know how that inspires man to go and make their own set. And we were sending our sets to every single radio station trying to get to, you know, to be on a radio station doing our own set after that, like off the back of watching F Radio. Like, the least I can do is try and set up something. And I remember when I spoke to Rootkid, and I remember the conversations we had, and I remember us speaking about Getz, and I was saying to him, Getz is one of the best in the country. This is not a conversation. Why are we conversating about it? Let's just have some fun. Let's just get into studio. Let's just do this.
Bruv, let's just do cool shit is what I try and do every day. Like, that's the way I try and approach everything. Let's just do cool shit.
And I'm happy with that, because that Relentless thing was funny, because do you know what it was? So we've gone to Relentless, and I didn't go first. The Confect went, and the Confect, they brought me. Well, they broke up now, but the Confect, when they were together, they brought me. And it was Joe and Miles, actually, that specifically brought me to Relentless, and we met a young lady there, and we had various conversations, and I saw the space, and I was just thinking to myself, this space is on Denmark Street. Do you know how much people would profit from using this space that maybe are in music but don't have like a way of getting to studio and so on and so forth? So I remember I called Rootkid, I called Etta Bond, who else did I call? I tried to call so much people, because I was like, I know these people sometimes don't have studios, but this studio is right here and they can help each other, and these people should have a regular studio, because it's not fair that they don't have a place to record, but they're so, so skilled. That ain't fair. Like, how can we try and sort this out? So I always think about things like that. And anytime there's an opportunity to try and change it, that's what I feel like I have to do, because I owe grime, I own all of this my life. That's how I feel. I feel like I owe it my life. So when I phoned Rootkid, the guy was so, like, he's, bro, I could phone Rootkid right now and ask for something and he would deliver it. Like, that guy is just so cool. He's such a good person. And I was happy that I could help him. I remember listening to you on Kiss FM all the time, Logan. Like, I religiously listened to the set between you, Getz, and Kano. No, Kano, Getz, and Skepta when the 140 gram sheet
set.
Bro,
yeah.
I'm big. I'm bun down the city, bad boy. But I don't run around with Diddy. I used to recite the whole set. So it's like, when I saw Rootkid now go to Kiss FM, knowing that my entry point to it was you, it was like, oh my God, like, has that relentless situation potentially, maybe not fully because he's the reason he's there, but has that had some potential in him getting there? Logan, them things make me so happy.
I definitely think it has, because if you look at like a lot of what Rukid does, obviously he is a very, very talented music producer. But you look at like a lot of the content around what he's doing. A lot of us do DJ sets and you don't see it.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times I'll see Rukid do stuff and like there'll be a camera there. Like it will look nice. It'll be edited up. There'll be a nice little viral piece. You see the little relentless bumper at the end. It's definitely helped out.
That's amazing.
That's just
bro.
The branding. Do you know what I mean? The talent needs to be packaged and branded so it can be sold on and bought into, man. And I think, you know, that's these like corporate relationships, especially where like someone like myself or Roots or Spyro or whatever, and we're like frontline hands on, we're just trying to do music. When you have those contacts and that network that you might have as someone who's experienced so much from grime. As a listener, as a fan, and even made it yourself, yeah, man. Like to be able to provide those opportunities and those links and those contacts is a godsend, bro. Because in this day and age, to do music is hard.
Of course,
because you're just slogging away, you're grinding away, and you have no idea what moment the reward's gonna come back
at all.
I don't know what tune's gonna blow. I don't know when this break's gonna come, and I can't control it. All I can control is consistently working hard and trying my best all the time, and to be the angel that can just swoop in and go, there's the 5 bags to do this, there's the 10 bags in funding to do this, and fit, bro. That like that's. You know, that's significant money. That's several months' mortgage payments.
Do you be honest
that I would have to give up to and fund this thing that I don't know is going to work.
Do you know, I always dreamed of doing this. Like when I was younger, I was a youth worker. I'd done youth work for 9 years, and I became obsessed with building communities and building safe environments for people to do whatever they want, as long as they were happy, it's positive, and just grow. I had an obsession with it. I had a football team that we built, and we got like people trials for football clubs at Spurs. My boy Rich came in with Mikey. We got Southampton, Bear Clubs, like from Nile Ranger. We got my boy Moose. There were so much things that we done as you like. We got people into education and so on and so forth. And it built a small community of people that done various different things, but we all started together. And some have gone to play football, and some I still speak to now a lot. And I really like that sense of community, because when I haven't seen them in like 5, 4, 6 years, we still come back and we have good things to talk about, because we remember the start of our journey. And I became obsessed with that within the world that I work in now. And I was like, I have to be able to do that. Otherwise, there's no point. Because if the industry is just grime and everyone's at war with each other and no one's united, what happens is, with no togetherness there, someone can come in, piece it together how they like, and then monopolize and control it.
Or take the bits out that they want as well.
And then throw some of the other stuff under the carpet. So I thought to myself, all right, cool. I have lived within this my whole entire life. I know this back to front. I've been a student of it, and now I participate in it. And I've participated in it longer than I've been a student. So now, some of the information that, like, who's hot and all of that, I'll never know, because I'm so involved in it. Sometimes I've got to take a step back from it, whereas someone that's a student of it will continue to learn. So what I need to do is make sure all of it is connected. So the students are with the people as well that are involved in it. So, like, we understand how privileged we are to be in this position, and we try and help people that are students to be involved in as well and build a stronger community. So when it comes to things like, I can go say to Relentless, go and help this guy and do this and do that, off the strength of me helping to build the community bigger so we have more say. Because if the community is one person, that's not a lot of money. If the community is 10 people, and one person is a producer, and one person's a video director, and one person does A&R, in now you've got some type of industry. Now if that is everyone together working together, we can run this shit. Our industry is the coolest industry out of every single industry in England. The only problem is we don't get along enough, because we're not honest with each other, and everyone's out for themselves. I swear on my kid's life, Logan, as you sit in my house, bro, I am not out for myself. I swear to God, I'm not out for myself. I'll never lie. I'm not out for myself, because that's not enough. If we really want to leave something behind for us to really grow, I have to help whoever I can at any time that I can help them. So it doesn't mean I'm going to help everyone. That's far too much pressure. But if it means I can phone someone and say, yo, Rukid, get here, or like things I used to do for loads of other people, I have to, I look at it as an obligation. I have to do it.
Do you know what it is? It's just taking that extra moment to think, okay, who could benefit from this?
Exactly, bro.
That little extra moment. And there's some people that wouldn't cross the street for someone else. Do you know what I mean?
Bro.
Like, it's really like just
but they tunnel don't understand. Vision,
blinkered.
But Logan, if you help someone, it will help you.
Of course.
Shout out Mr. Exposed. Mr. Exposed got me through a door the other day that I could never have got through because I wasn't in that room to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Ian Wright. Shout out Ian Wright. He's had conversations in rooms that I couldn't have that conversation because I wasn't allowed in, and he's defended me and it's changed people's perception. Like, loads of people have helped me like that because I just want to help everyone. What happens is you build a community of people that genuinely want to help each other so we can all grow and prosper. The idea of being at the top and being the best and being the king, I don't understand why that excites people. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't. What's the obsession with being the king?
It's a fantasy, isn't it, really?
It's trash. I'd rather live in a village where we're all kings of our own right. So you might be the king of football and this might be the king of the... But we're all kings within our own right and we all respect each other's roles. And I proper respect you, Logan. I respect what you've done for this scene. I respect your contributions. I respect the fact that you try and put people on. I respect that you're an individual that has kept something I genuinely love alive for so long, bro. Like, I can't disrespect you. If I can ever help you, I have to. That's how I look at it. And I just wish that more people looked at it like that because then the industry would be ours. We would own it.
Yeah, man.
The fact that there's MCs older than me that are broke, it makes me so angry. They sacrifice their whole shit, their whole childhood, so I can even be doing stuff. And they don't have money, but I'm cool. I'm cool enough to have a house and shit like that. I feel like a waste, man, fam. I feel like, what can I do for that older generation that helped me? People are getting, like, ill. Like, I was talking to Wiley the other day. A man's ill in the grime scene. It's like, fam, like, we haven't even forked out no... I'm not rich, you know what I'm saying, but... I'm sure there's enough money within our industry to start helping individuals that have helped our scene get to where it is in some capacity. If they fall ill, we should be able to sort them out straight away. There's so much of us. But he's going over there. He's
Do you know what I feel? I feel like there's a lot of fear. Like, there's a lot of fear and self-doubt and lack of self-belief where at the back of people's minds, they think it's going to end tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? And people act in a fearful way of self-preservation, which manifests itself as selfishness as well. Yeah, there's definitely some people that are straight up selfish and they know that they're blessed for the rest of their life and they're still not going to try and help. But there's definitely a lot of people out there that are acting out of fear. I can personally remember, and this isn't related to anyone else in the scene, but in my personal life, I got my show on Kiss. I was on Rinse for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Somehow, I got offered the show on Kiss. Amazing. After 2 years on Rinse, which was mind-boggling because Rinse was my first regular radio show. So that's mad quick. Like, that was mad quick. And I'm thinking, yeah, this is sick. But I've got a six-month contract. They might not renew it. Like, I might get on Kiss and then I'll come back off again straight away. It might not work. It might be... You know, this music might not work there. It might be, I remember Kiss, and Kiss was all like garage and bubbly and commercial, and Grimes like proper Aggie shouting, pyro radio, bare beef at the time. Yeah, this might not last. And like my missus at the time was like, oh yeah, you know, she wanted to get a place and family. And I was acting in a way that was fearful because I didn't want to commit to those things because... I didn't feel like to get a mortgage, to raise a ute, like to have those financial responsibilities. I was afraid that the blessings that I had received would be taken away from me and then I'd be fucked and I would let other people down around me. So it never manifested itself in me acting selfish to anyone else in the community, you know, because I've never cared about really doing things that will make... If I cared about making money, then fucking hell, I wouldn't have just played grime only for 15 years. Yeah. But it definitely affected the way in which I moved in my personal life where, you know, that probably cost me my relationship at the time. Because it made me pull away and pull back. And that probably came across like, oh, he's not interested in me kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that probably manifests itself in different ways for other people, for other artists in the industry, in the music. But that lack of confidence and belief... Because it is kind of rare that in grime you have people that do super, super well.
Mm-hmm.
And you have people that do super, super badly financially. Yeah?
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of career musicians that are like, yeah, bruv, I'm just comfortably playing my music, or paying my mortgage off grime music. There's not a lot of them where, you know, you get your Skeptas and Stormzy's and AJ Tracy's that are quading shows everywhere, flying through space.
They're lit.
Yeah, or young guys that are coming through and, you know, they're getting their time now. Like, Zoo's getting his time. He's on the up and he's getting better opportunities. He's doing podcasts, presenting, all stuff. I see him hanging out with Jurgen Klopp, doing a madness.
He's amazing.
Bless you. Love him. But that, like you said, the older artists, that mid-tier of artists, it's hard because there's not a lot of ways to generate revenue. And I feel like maybe...
And this is what there is, and this is what it is, Logan.
But there isn't the industry infrastructure and community to facilitate that where man can. Oh yeah, I'm doing the soundtrack for FIFA. I can slide that tune on there. Or I'm doing the soundtrack, like FIFA's a big bait one and there are tunes on there, but there's hundreds of games that come out every year. Do you know what I mean? And
that's the problem.
I don't know these people. We don't know these people.
But this is the problem right there. That's the problem. All right. So when I was younger, my dad had a lot of money. Logan, I was a very spoilt child.
Okay.
I had 3 PlayStations. I was a very privileged child in the hood.
Your YouTube personality makes more sense now.
I was a bit of a spoilt brat to a certain extent. And then, you know, my dad got his pen. And Logan, everything changed.
Yeah.
It was cold. Sometimes it was cold, bro. And that contrast between whatever I want, and your demands are not going to be like, I want a car or anything, but anything I wanted, I could get. And it could be the best of whatever it was. To, no, that's not how it's going to work no more. You got to work for this. That, in my mind, made me realize that my dad had got to a point where he had that through hard work. He didn't just get there. He had to work a particular way to get to that point. So I sat down and I said, all right, cool. If I start working hard now, I'll get to that point quicker than my dad did. And then I'll look at the mistakes my dad made and hopefully try not to replicate those mistakes. So everything I do, that's my mentality. So I don't expect much from anyone. So if I think, cool, Trevor Nelson's show, The Lick, was sick. Why ain't no one doing anything like that for artists in our country? I'm not going to look to see who's doing it. I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah.
I know guys with cameras. I know an editing team. I know a few people in the scene. I'm going to do it myself. And I'm not going to get the biggest eyes at the start. No, I'm not. But by the end of the 6th episode, we had Dot Rotten when he just got signed.
Yeah.
Appear on our show. By the 4th, 5th series, I've got Nas. Now, I knew that was going to happen because I know I'm good at what I do. And if I package it in a way, because I'm a student, I'm a consumer. As much as I'm involved, I'm a consumer. So I don't really go to the parties. I'm not around loads of people. Genuinely, no disrespect to, like, I just find half of these people very insecure and I can't be around that energy for too long because I spend half my time trying to figure out what's wrong with them. So let me just get away. I don't want to be around all of that. But what I will do is try and help everyone. So I will create what I want to see. I don't sit down and rely on someone to do it because no one's obligated to do it for me. So I created That's a Wrap. And we've done 5, 6 series. We went from our own YouTube channel to SBTV, Grime Daily. These were when it was hot. We were getting 100,000 views in under a week. And then obviously the Grime Daily channel got taken down. But we were getting 100,000 views on a 22-minute video with us just cruising around with Getz in the hood and seeing Demon in the bloody barbershop. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Create what you want to see. And that's what I say to so much people in this scene. Like, podcasts, my bro, I mean this in the greatest possible respect. I done a podcast in 2013, 2014 because I was tired of my face. I was like, how can I sonically get people's attention from talking? How many years down the line, there's a podcast community now. When Taser phoned me, I want to do a podcast. All right, cool. Yo, Dan, can you sort out... I've got Taser, he's lit, he's going to do this type of podcast, I've spoken to him about it, it's going to be called, can you do it in the same place that I do mine? What did Taser do? He brought the receipts. he understood the mantra of I'm gonna help.
Yeah.
And then I helped a couple other people. Now we've got a podcast community of loads of people. Sick. That's the way it's meant to be. I wanted that to happen. And football was the one I'm really proud of. And this is the reason why people shouldn't get into something and want to see results after a year, 2 years. You can ask Mitch. I swear, you can ask Mitch, you can ask my brother. I told them I'm going to merge football and music lifestyle. Going to merge it. And by the time I merge it, no one's going to know I did it. It's just going to be a thing and no one's going to know how it happened. I said in America, basketball and rap is one.
I remember having, it weren't with you, because if we're honest, I've not had a lot of long conversations with you over the years.
No.
But I remember talking to, and that's clearly a mistake on my part, because this is a very fascinating conversation and there's a lot of very similar thought process. But I remember, I watch a lot of American sports.
Yeah.
Like, because my dad likes NFL and baseball.
Lit.
And I grew up having it on in the house. So I watched that. And NBA looked cool as shit as well. And
Too cool.
You know, when I was a kid, Jordan was doing a madness. And so you can't avoid it. So it looks sick as well. I'm already caring about American shit and whatever. I remember all the time you see these young black athletes in America. And they are fully repping their culture. Fully repping their culture on big massive. ESPN, NBC, all of these massive channels broadcasting to tens of millions of people.
Yeah.
And that obviously includes the music.
Yeah.
And I hear them going on about, you know, you'll hear them talk about what they're listening to in the changing room, in the locker room. You know, they'll be, you know, now in this era where they're putting up videos, listening to music and stuff. And for the longest of times, I would look at our footballers who are just man from the estate. They are me and you, but they just happen to be sick of kicking ball and they're getting paid tens of thousands of pounds a week at that time. But I'm seeing them, man, all in Napa, 98, 99, 2000. They're all there. All there in Napa, listening to all the same music that I'm listening to. They know all the underground tunes. They know all the guys coming through as well. And then, you know, 2-3 years further down the line, Boy Better Know in Napa as well. I know all of these young ballers that are coming through 17, 18, they're listening to that. Bruv, I read every interview. Yeah, listening to 50 Cent. What do you listen to into the locker room? Yeah, I listen to Nas. I'm not seeing no British names on these lists. And I'm thinking, why? Because I know these guys listen to us. I know that because we'll see them out and they'll hail man up and whatever. The crossover just wasn't there. But now, further down the line,
I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, it had to.
The reason why it had to happen,
because it was real.
Someone had to show them. Because you got to take a look at the lifestyle surrounded around football. It's in the pub, have a pint. Yeah. When you watch it on television, no disrespect, it's white dons in suits, very well dressed. There's some of the suits look tailor-made. Like Andy Gray had tailor-made suits. Like that shit ain't cheap. So instantly, as a boy who was dressing the way I was wearing Astros with jeans, like it was lit. Like no one on television I can relate to. And then I see Ian Wright.
And even the pundits. Like,
that's what I'm talking about, the pundits.
The pundits, you didn't even have like cool ex-footballers. No. It was Alan Hansen.
Steve Claridge. And
yeah, like they're old dons.
Who are these? But I understood it because
it's
a part of British culture. Football's very much a part of British culture.
Yeah.
And the only way that...
And British culture was changing at that time as well.
But someone has to... Because remember, this is 2012 and football is still not cool. I'm talking about it on Twitter. Vuj is talking about it on Twitter. Scorch is talking about it on Twitter. Tinchy Strider is talking about it on Twitter.
Yeah.
Femme Fell's talking about it on Twitter. We're arguing about this on Twitter. But no one's going viral from arguing about football on Twitter. No. Nobody. So I'm sitting down and I'm saying, but all my brethrens watch football and all of us are cool. My brethrens wear Evisu jeans and Averix jackets and watch football, but no one would know. So this is like the biggest kept secret. So you mean to tell me, when I tell everyone this is what we do, everyone's going to have to come out of hiding like, yeah, I do it as well. Yeah. They just need a spokesperson. Cool, I'll do it. I said, I'll do it. So I did it at Copper 90 for a little while. And I realized it wasn't cutting through. I brought Krypton Conan over there. I brought Big Nasty over there in the first season. I had them wait. And I was saying to them, these guys are going to be the biggest guys. Oh, are you sure, Paul? They still ask me that. They were asking me up until 2 years ago when I was there, can you bring these people through now? Because they see how big they are. But that's another conversation. So I've said, all right, cool. Bring these people. It's still not working. Then I look at the place that I'm presenting it, and I look at the whole channel, and I look at all the content on it, and I'm like, I'm just a small part of a bigger operation.
Yeah.
I need my
people
own.
People are not coming here for this.
Okay.
I hear you.
So I said to myself, I made my own YouTube channel. But first I said, out of respect for Cop and I want to do a show called Filthy Fellas.
Yeah.
What's it like? Me and my friends have a WhatsApp group. We talk about football in the cruddiest way. That is not shown, but everyone has a WhatsApp group and everyone does it. Yeah. That means it will work. How do you know? Because I live real life. I don't live this fabricated world where I'm in these industry parties all the time and all of that. No, I'm immersed in real life. I know what people want because I'm around enough people to figure it out within my jurisdiction. Not all across life, but if I know what people want in football. This will work. Didn't listen to me. I went and made my own YouTube channel. Best idea. I didn't make it actually. I changed my YouTube channel to Filthy Fellas. Bro, the reasons why people talk about, the reasons why football is cool is because of Filthy Fellas.
Do you know what was super sick about Filthy Fellas? And it's a really good lesson for people to want to make their own content as well, right? The numbers, even still to this day, the numbers of Filthy Fellas that you guys are getting for your videos are not astronomical numbers.
Nope.
But you know what? You get the right people watching it.
And even more than that, the purpose of Filthy Fellas is the reason why it works.
Yeah.
The purpose of Filthy Fellas changed. And I like what it became a year down the line. It's the Heat FM for presenters. It's the Heat FM. Grab the mic and do your thing. And eventually when you're hot, you're going to go. There's no place like that for anyone. But I knew that worked in Heat FM. I knew that
it's
worked.
It's like the represent radio of TV presenters, bro.
So that's what you have to make. And everyone's going at each other. We're cussing this. We're doing that. And yeah, one thing I can say right now that I'm not too proud of is the fact that we used to really go at footballers. And maybe some of it wasn't too classy. And I apologize to every footballer we may have abused at the time, but we were young, naive.
This is a conversation that we're gonna have at least 20 minutes worth of discussion on, because like that era, what kind of, we're talking 2014, yeah, 2010 to 2015 of social media and online content was the Wild West. And you're 34, I'm 38 this year. I know it's hard to believe, but I'm 38.
You look
now.
Young as fuck.
But like, we all grew up on Richard Pryor, then Eddie Murphy, like Bernie Mac, I like Bill Hicks as well, fucking hell, Bagger, like the comedy that we were used to watching and growing up on was, say, the worst thing you can think of. What's the worst thing you can think of?
And then you say,
and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. And it was done performatively and not thoughtfully as well.
Of course.
Because it was literally just like, bruv, the kind of fucked up shit that I saw on the internet when I was a teenager. Like, do you know what a website called Ogrish is?
No.
Ogrish was a website. Ogrish was a website where they hosted all of the most fucked up videos, like army executions, man getting burnt alive in whatever for being a rapist in village somewhere, like this person stepped out in front of a truck and it was caught on a CCTV, like the fucked up, most fucked up videos on the internet.
I used to watch all of that type of
stuff. But Ogrish was the like the place that they aggregated it all, and it got taken off. But like, I remember people sending around links of, have you seen this? And you're watching like, oh, fuck, man. Why did I watch that? Why did I even click this? To the point at which, you know, certain man send a video in the group chat. I'm not even downloading that. I'm turning auto downloads off this WhatsApp group. I don't want that shit on my phone. That was definitely a culture that a lot of men specifically have been part of. And we were thoughtlessly part of it as well, because it was performative. Men are all very insecure. We all want to be mates. We want to be liked and fit in groups.
I did. I'll tell you that.
And what can I say to get a laugh out of people, especially when you're trying to do stuff on the internet and like you're driving, looking to drive numbers. You're
but it's not even get engaged. Sometimes it's not, but that's now. I would say that's now. I wouldn't say that was.
It was too because much.
But not for me anyway.
Don't tell me in 2012 you were not putting tweets out on Twitter thinking, yeah, this tweet's going to bang.
I promise you I wasn't, and I'll tell you
definitely
why.
Definitely was, because I followed you and I saw it.
No, but that was my life. Imagine, you see, like, so the reasons why...
Maybe not to get strangers. I'm not saying you were trying to get random people to go viral.
I'm showing you, like, but basically like, my frame of mind.
My brethren will find this fucking hilarious, so I'm going to tweet this.
Possibly, yeah. My friends will find this funny, definitely. And I'll tell you why it was my frame of mind as well. Imagine this. So social media has been around for how long? Not that long.
Most of us joined Twitter in, like, 09.
All right, cool.
So 10 years.
So if the ability to express yourself in 140 characters has only been around for like 9 years.
Yeah.
Someone had to get it wrong.
Yeah, a lot of us got it wrong.
Because I'm telling you, in 2010, I had left England twice.
Yeah.
Twice I had left England. I had gone to...
Oh, as in, but from your birth to 2010, you had only left the country twice.
Twice.
Okay.
To Jamaica and to France. So my view of the world was North London.
Yeah.
Yeah, I traveled a bit out of North London, but my view of the world was North London. The things that were acceptable and normalized in North London, I know now as I've traveled and I've lived a different life, that that is absolutely crazy. But stabbings, robberies, all of these things, it wasn't like, oh my God, shock, that happened. That was like, yeah, but come on fam, or man, if I clap back or whatever. It was all normalized. So if that's normal in my mind, the things I'm saying on Twitter, that's not bad to me. That's not even half as bad as what I'm going to go and see when I jump out and I go. I'm going to see something much more cruddier than youth work, bro. I had like, people will tell you, like when I worked in Ferry Lane, I had a knife to my stomach, bro. Like, and it was on it so much that it started piercing the skin a bit, that blood was falling down the knife and going down my stomach. Like, bro, that was my real life. So if I tweet some stupidness, I'm like, shut up, man. I'll just come offline because it didn't mean that much to me if I hurt someone's feelings in New Zealand. I didn't care, bro, because I've got some stuff happening in my life. So my world was so warped because I didn't take social media real. It was just nothing to me. I didn't think any. I would tweet something about Jay-Z because I'm thinking, Jay-Z ain't ever going to see this. It was that type of ignorance.
Yeah.
You didn't think anything like that. So the lack of thought was the reasons why it was so bad. For me personally,
no,
anyway.
And I agree. It's a complete lack of thought and consideration.
So then you make the mistakes. And then you see the effect of what you've done. And then you go, this is a bit trash. But then, 2013, my life changes. I drive from LA to Chicago. I get called a nigger by a boy in Texas of 13 years old. With his dad, and I'm the only black person in this whole thing. Like, I didn't really experience full-on racism like that before that. My world was North London. There's black people everywhere.
Yeah.
You go Tottenham Swan, there's a bag of Jamaicans. You go Broadwater Farm, there's just bare Nigerians, Ghanaians, Jamaicans. Like, when am I going to really experience racism outright in my face like that? Yeah, I'll experience it in a different way, but like outright, you nigger, never going to happen, bro. We'll punch you up. So when I've gone and seen that type of life, that's when I've said, wait a minute. And then my tweets started calming down. Obviously not all the way down. It's not overnight change. To the point where I am today, where I've traveled so much and I've lived so much life now, I realize all of those things I've done were wrong. I've made the mistakes. I just shouldn't have made them in public. Had the generation before us had social media, they would have made the mistakes because they were making the mistakes in real life. But when you make that mistake in a community hall and there's no camera phone, only 20 people that find out. If you make that mistake today in a community hall, you run the risk of 1 million people finding out you made that mistake. That's a lot of pressure for people to live with, especially if you're 16, 17 years old, just trying to figure out life anyway. So my perception of social media and how it's used and the reasons things happened and what we should do to people and how we should speak about it is very different to a lot of people because I have a different level of understanding because of the way I've immersed myself in it.
Yeah.
A lot of people haven't been involved in it. When they realize you can make money from social media, that's when it's... Before that, it was a flipping playground with no head teachers. But
Twitter in 2010 to 2012 was a group chat.
It was a group chat.
It was a group chat because no one cared about grime. No one cared about our culture. Our culture wasn't cool. No one cared about what we were doing.
We would speak about
it. Yes, but, you know, it was... I'd tweet this guy over there and that guy, and we're replying. And if you look at like my tweets that got pulled up, they're all replies to people. Yeah. It's all group chats and stuff, and it's not. I'm not going on there saying, by the way, I actually think women are terrible, and I have a real problem with this group and that. It's cracking jokes with people, thoughtless, ignorant, stupid jokes with people that I just thought, it's whatever, isn't it?
I've done the same. I was absolutely thinking that this was the funniest shit in the world.
Yes.
And when people say to me, would you take it back? I say, probably not. Do you know why? I needed to, and I'm not saying everyone needed to, but I needed to make the mistakes so I could get the harsh reality.
Yes, sir.
I could feel like absolute shit so I understand
the
damage of what I've done. So that was my level of thinking towards the thing. So like, it's, you know, I have a different
And I'm also perception. Glad that that happened, because you hope that people will learn from other people's mistakes.
Yes.
I don't want people to... That, do you know what the saddest thing for me was after my thing with the BBC happened?
Yeah.
I saw other people carry on doing it and get pulled up as well. And they're still tweeting recce. They're still tweeting reckless stuff and getting pulled up two, three months after my thing. And I'm thinking, like, if I go through this harsh learning experience, I don't want other people to go through this.
Yeah.
I don't want, like, if I go through it, cool. I'll hold that L and grow from it and become a better person and a more considerate, thoughtful person of my actions and channel my energy more positively, because it's a fucking waste of energy just chatting shit on the internet. But I don't want to see other people do it after I've been made an example out of. And again, you say... Would you go back and change it? I would change it, because it's negative and hurtful behavior, but I would not change it because that example being made is good. Like, people, unfortunately, as human beings, learn from trauma. They only really change from trauma. Mm. And if they see other people go through trauma, it will make them avoid that trauma themselves. If you see a man get his hand burnt, you're not going to run afterwards and put your hand in the fire afterwards, are you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I want to see... I wanted people to go, okay, maybe I should be a bit more considerate about what I'm doing and what I'm putting out there into the world as well.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen.
I mean, when it happened to me, I wasn't even concerned about... Well, I was concerned about myself. I was just like, mate, I had to sort a couple of things out, mate, with myself.
Yeah.
And I just said to myself, whatever anybody wants to think of me is entirely up to them. They're actually, everyone's entitled to do as they please, for the simple fact that we all have to live with our decisions. We all have to live with our mistakes and live with our accomplishments as well. So all that situation done was, it humbled the hell out of me. Like, bro, you're out here pointing out everyone else's differences, but look, when it happens to you and it's on a bigger scale, like, what are you going to do? And it's just like, you just got to fucking deal with it. Like, and I can even say to you now that on the larger scale of life, on the bigger scale of life, it means nothing.
It was nothing. It was shit, really. We're both still here. We're both still, like, doing, working, basically doing what we want to do.
Mm.
I held a big L on that. Fucking hell, that year was very difficult, personally, financially, emotionally. Yeah.
Many
Lees.
That's my
bare Lees. Not Capo Lee, but yeah, plenty of them. But fuck it, I'm not dead. Do you know what I mean? I'm not homeless. I'm not suffering from any of the persecution that people have to go through on a daily basis, like, anyway in life, for things as simple as the colour of their skin, the religion they were brought up in, their, you know, the sexuality, the way they choose to live their lifestyle. I lost a bunch of opportunities because I was very irresponsible with my platform and ignorant about what I was saying and thoughtless about it. So, you know, fucking woe is me. Oh, well.
But, bro, you're the first man over the hill. Like, I don't even put that much, like, before I'd be so hard on myself. I'm not even that hard on myself anymore, man. I'm not that hard on myself. If I was a shit person, I'd be hard on myself. I'm not a shit person. If somebody wants to come and point all the shit stuff that I've done in my life and live by that, that sounds like a personal problem to me. Like, I'm not going to walk up to someone and judge them on their worst behavior. If we do that, that means we're just going to not like anyone. Yeah. So there has to be a compromise at some point. And if you're not willing to compromise, that's actually your problem. And it can't be mine.
And allow people room for growth as well, man. Shit.
Bro, like, I've made that mistake. I think I've made that mistake a few times. I think I've made that mistake with, like, with Dave one time. I was like, why is Dave doing this? And someone said to me, you know, Dave is this age. I was like, and then I look at Dave now and I'm just like, my God. What was I doing at his age? I was doing absolute nonsense. Like, nothing constructive. Like, not even crud. I was just an idiot. I was doing nothing constructive. Yeah. So now it's just like my frame of mind has changed a lot from my incidents to make me realize, you know what? Man, if I just start celebrating certain people's accomplishments and celebrating people's best. And if you're a shit person like R. Kelly, I'll say it. Yeah, you're a shit person. Yeah. And if you were burning, I probably wouldn't piss on you. But like other people that are not shit people.
Which is ironic, of course.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it just doesn't mean anything, man. Bruv, I'm exhausted by nonsense. I won't lie to you.
Yeah.
Exhausted by nonsense.
You can only really focus on just doing your best and carrying on being positive. Like if you believe you're a good person at heart, then carry on focusing on working on that.
But it's just like, bro, like I just focus on the fact that I have a plan and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
And it's not to the detriment of anybody else. So along the way, there's going to be bumpy journey. There's going to be bumpy roads. Like, I get that. Yeah. Like, I'm not the greatest parent in the world. I'm not the greatest son. I'm not the greatest friend. I'm not the greatest cousin or greatest brother. I'm not the greatest at anything. I've probably made mistakes and I'm still going to make mistakes. So I know that. I'm cool with that. If other people ain't cool with that, Logan, from the bottom of my heart, I just don't care. I proper don't care because I can't care. I've got loads of things to care about. I've got really got a lot of things to do. I cannot be concerned with someone else's opinion of me that I don't know. Like, it just doesn't make sense. If I can get, like, emotionally attached to something like that, maybe I should just, like, turn the computer off. It's 47 minutes, by the way. I'm joking.
You fool.
Yeah, man, I don't care about that stuff, man.
How many times a month do you have to speak to Alhan?
Oh, bruv, not enough. Not enough, man. What a incredible human he is, man. He epitomizes what I'm talking about. He's a 20-year-old boy that can wind up a 35-year-old man. And I think that says more about the 35-year-old man than it says about the 20-year-old boy. He's a 20-year-old, although he's very intelligent.
Yeah.
Although he's literally one of the most intelligent people I know. He's literally one of the most ambitious people, the most driven people. Like, Alhan's an inspiration to his generation by far. With ease. He's in 20 years' time, Alhan's going to be one of the most integral figures in this whole thing. Like, he's incredible. But the fact that he has the ability to wind up grown men with kids, houses, mortgages, mistresses, as well as their wife. Like, you've got so much other shit to be worried about. Why do you care so much what Alhan's saying? It confuses me. I think it says more about other people than it says about Alhan.
Do you think it's impossible to cancel Alhan?
I think it's impossible to cancel anyone.
In 2000, definitely isn't.
It is.
No.
People get
cancelled. You can't speak in absolutes.
Possibly. All right. I mean, cunts.
R. Kelly's cancelled.
Yeah, but that. Yeah. All right. Cool. So people like that, they have to get cancelled. So, but the sad thing is, you still might not be able to cancel them.
But their scales are grey, though. Yeah, of course.
Because do you know why I say you can't? Because it's like, 2011, Dappy video comes out.
Epstein's definitely cancelled. He cancelled himself.
But the killer is like, you know, the KKK actually have a channel and they make content.
Mad.
And they make money from it.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's so much fuckery happening in life. There's so much people that are not cancelled that are absolute pricks. Can you really get cancelled or can you just not go on Twitter again? Like, I proper think about it hard. Like, 2011, I remember being in a Dappy video and getting a letter from BBC that says I'm banned for 10 years. And kicked off Twin Show. And I remember there was a lady, I'll say her name now, God bless you, I love you today, but there was a lady called Emma. She was my mate, she was trying to help me. She sent me a documentary of all the reasons why she was disappointed and she didn't like me and she was vexed with me. And she would walk past me when she saw me in the building. And this was somebody that I invested time in, she invested time in me. And after the Dappy video, I didn't know what I was doing. Bro, she was went so cold on me and everyone started to treat me as if to say, like, we could have let you in, but we're shutting the door. Because I swear on my kids, you can't cancel me, bro. Logan, there's people out here that are more talented than me. I will outwork every single one of them. There's people out here that have more connections than me. It doesn't matter. I don't sleep. I sleep for 4 hours a day. If I'm going to get cancelled, it'll be cancelled on my terms. I'm not a prick. I'm not a dickhead. I'm a very intelligent person who thinks a lot about what I do. You can't cancel me. Do you know why? I made Filthy Fellas. That is something I own that I can make people successful from. I help contribute to making Half Cars. I help contribute to making Gasworks.
That list, the list of brands is mad.
I help contribute to making Vibar. I help contribute to making Poet and Vooj channel. These are all channels that I can release a song and I can go and do an interview of myself on the podcast. I can go and do another interview on Gasworks. I can all go and promote the song on the intros of Filthy Fellas. Yeah. And how can you cancel me if I have my own industry and my own community of people that were so sick?
And I think that's very important as well because like, they're so you're not sick. I think about this a lot with music as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you are an artist that gets the bring in from like a major.
Yeah.
And you're placed in all these places.
Yeah.
Because they have the network and they have the power to go, oh yeah, well, you know, we can put you in this playlist.
Then you're
we
fucked. Can put you in
exactly. If next month fucked. They decide, you know what, actually, we like this person. We think this person's going to make us more money, so we're going to focus on them and air you out. What have you got left?
Bro, imagine. Nothing. And the prime example of that.
But if you're like Bugsy Malone.
Real amazing, amazing example.
If you're
amazing.
Like Bugsy Malone, who needs nobody because he is directly in contact with everybody that consumes all of his shit. Like, if tomorrow JD Sports said, yeah, you know what, like, whatever, you put out this video and there's a bit too much violence in it and we don't want to be associated with you, we're going to go in a different direction, brand, imaging, blah, 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 blah. Bugsy Malone could just go, right, cool, I own B Malone.
But
I'm going to do it myself.
This is the killer.
And I was still shot, safe, cool.
Everyone can.
Yes.
I swear on everything. Everyone can. I say this all the time. If you believe in God, that means after Christ, the world has been here for 2019 years. That means we only know what we know from when we've lived and stories from the past. But every single day, the world's changing. So how can you tell me what's going to happen tomorrow? You can make an assumption. We can all say it's going to be whatever day it is tomorrow. We can say all of this, but we don't know. We don't own tomorrow. We don't know anything. We only know what we know. So that means we should always open our mind to learning something new. And I'm always prone to learning. And I had an obsession with this cancelling thing. And I thought, 2011, that happened to me. But I was cool. And then 2015, 16, RIP Cadet. I remember me and Cadet having a conversation on the phone about a situation where I said some things about black women. It was pathetic. And then I was apparently cancelled. But I'm still here. Then that thing that happens in April was one of the most embarrassing things that's ever happened in my life. I can tell you to people, I was in fucking tears. I can say to people, bro, I felt like absolute shit. I can tell people that I was ready to just quit everything. That was me cancelling myself. Like, the good thing about what I tried to do is I tried to, every time I've made a mistake, I'm aware of it before everyone else is. Let me try and change that. I don't like that. And you know what the killer is? The community of people that I had built and I tried to make great content for recognize that. And that's why I say I'm not cancelled. That's why I work my ass off. Because you know what? Not only do I have great friends and great family, bro, there's an audience of people that support me that I swear to God, I will do everything for. I will try my best to do everything for. And if that makes our community bigger and stronger so more people can come in and more people can be successful, I swear my kids, I'll try everything. Everything. Because had it not been for the community that watched me, I wouldn't have a job, Logan. That's the reality. So I owe them everything, and that's why you can't get cancelled, bro. Like, no disrespect, but, like, Universal, you don't own my industry. And I mean that with the greatest respect. The greatest respect. Sony, you don't own my industry. You have parts of the industry, but you don't own it. You couldn't tell us H was going to be big. You didn't even know H was happening. Graham Daly knew that was happening. Jake knew that was happening. H knew that it was happening. His boys in Manny knew that was happening. If anything, you lot would have, the record label was one of the last people to find out. Yeah. H already had a fan base by then. And this is what I mean about most artists. You can't cancel them because what they're doing now is taking all of the things that you, resources that you give them, putting it into their own social media. They can leave and start a career afterwards anyway. Everyone's becoming bosses, bro. The way it should be.
I watch Wiley bounce out of every single office on High Street Ken. Because I suppose, like, in a financial way,
I love
him. you get dropped from your deal. Or they don't want, I say drop, they don't renew the term on your deal.
Mm.
That's kind of like, you're kind of like cancelled in that office. We don't want to work with you anymore. All right, cool. Go out the road. Go out the road.
Yeah, but you're not cancelled as well.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Yeah, I've seen Wiley do that for 15 years.
Hero.
Yeah. cool, I'm going to get the check here and we'll put the project out and whatever happens, happens. All right, cool. I know I'm still Nang. Everyone else thinks I'm still Nang. Yep. So I'm going to go to this office and I'll get this deal. Cool, safe. And yeah, I might make a Wearing My Rolex. I might make a Boasty remix, whatever it is that comes along. And yeah, you're either have to pay me the rate or I'll go somewhere else that will pay the rate and we'll keep it moving. And I will not die ever.
You know what?
There's a lot to be learned from that, man.
Wiley is, again, another man that will only be appreciated after he disappears, bro. When he just retires and says, I'm done. He. He's like, if this was a village, yeah, hopefully this is the right thing I'm going to put across as Wiley, because he's the really successful man in the village who takes absolutely nothing serious. And all he does is ridicule the new people coming out. Oh, back in my day. But you take it and you can't really... He's not like the crazy man in the village that you're like, oh, whatever, man, you ain't got nothing. He's the crazy man in the village that talks crazy but has everything. So because he's the crazy man in the village that has everything but still talks crazy, like, you've got everything, why would you be so miserable? That means there's something you're saying that must make a little bit of sense. Because you have so much, you have no reason to respond. Like the people that I know that behave like Wiley don't have much.
Mm.
But Wiley, you got so much. So what is it that you want? Oh, wait, you actually do have something to say. You just got a really shit way of communicating it. And what's so weird is that I've gone from not talking to Wiley to talking to Wiley more frequently than I ever imagined I would.
Mm.
And I can only talk highly of the man. He's fucking hilarious. And he's just a genius. He's a genius.
I feel like when you're a genius or super intelligent, it's really difficult to communicate what you're thinking in a way in which is understood or digestible to most people. Because your thought process or your train of thought is alien to most people as well.
And that's why I say...
And that must drive you mad. And that's probably why it becomes really frustrating as well. Because you're trying to communicate this thing and people are not getting it. But yeah, man, I definitely will go online and see Wiley arguing with Dave from Huddersfield with 15 followers in his mentions. So, yeah.
But and I've said to Wiley, you shouldn't do it because...
Wiley will argue as passionately with Tony from Ipswich as he will Ed Sheeran or Stormzy.
He's crazy.
He will argue with millionaires with just as much vigour and passion and commitment as he'll argue with a postman in his mentions.
I mean, I've said to him, you should channel that energy elsewhere and who knows what you can achieve. Yeah. But at the same breath, you look at what he's achieved and you're like, maybe this is just part of the process and you being you. I don't know. But what I do know is that, again, he's just a very integral figure to our scene and he has a lot of important things to say. And I think he just sometimes is probably the wrong person to deliver the message at times. But he's the best person because he's been here for so long. So it's a catch 22. Me personally, I'll listen to everything he says. I'll listen to what he has to say because I think he's always going to have something important to express.
And listening doesn't mean you agree. It just means you're taking it in. I'm trying to process it and determine what is it that you want to say.
Yeah. What do you... Because that's a lot of the things with Wiley. I'm always like, you're going to say a gem, but you're going to mix it up in a couple of things that maybe don't need to be said, or you're going to express it in a way which people don't want to understand. And what Wiley should understand as well, bro, and what most people in this creative field should understand is that you have a very unique way of thinking which separates you from your day-to-day person. So when you try to communicate them, if they don't understand, it's because they can't. You need to teach them how to... It's like a new language to them.
I think 99% of the people that he's speaking to have so much less experience than him of what he's talking about that you can't comprehend it. And I'd say still 95% of the people he's talking that he's talking to, his audience, are like people that have pretty much no experience. Like they're an audience, they're a crowd, they're listeners. So he's coming at it from I've built something from the ground up. I'm a custodian of this sound, which I was one of the people who built. And
I agree.
I've been stabbed 18 times for this, doing Jesus. This. You know what I mean? I've been in A&E on life support 3 times for this.
So that's why I can't tell him nothing.
I've spent millions of pounds myself on this. I've spent hundreds of thousands of pounds that I've never asked for back on studio time for other people on this. So when I feel so incredibly passionate about something that I think is wrong in this, how are you, Dave, from Cornwall, who gets his Spotify premium for free because he's a student and he's 19 years old, how are you going to understand what Wiley's saying? I don't think you can.
So then why would you tell him? That's sometimes I've had to realise, yeah, because I used to be like this. I used to be very triggered by people on social media and triggered by things. And I could tell you the other day, Bernardo Silva goes on Twitter or goes on his social
media. Mad still.
And he says that Mendy looks like he's naked because he's wearing all black. And I didn't even, all I've done was tweet it and said, oh, mate, what are you doing type of thing? Or something along the lines of that. I haven't even gone at Bernardo Silva. I've just said, like, this is a bit of an L. If you see my mentions, if you see what people are saying to me, I'm getting DMs of like, but if I'm white and if I wore all white outfit and you said anything, it's not that bad. And it's just like, let me go to your profile. You're 17 years old. You're in college. You're
support in Leeds United.
Do you know what I mean? It's like
Tony LUFC.
Like, should
2001.
Like, if you're not gonna be the type of person that I would have this type of conversation with in real life.
Oh,
why am I now gonna waste my time?
That is the most important thing.
And have this conversation
to think
here.
About with social media. If I would not, most of my issues with social media were from arguing with people that. Had no real investment in what I was passionate about at all. Man. Most of my wasted energy was arguing with people that didn't care as much as I cared about what I was talking about. People that had an opinion on Grime that when I really, if I search their timeline, I'll find like 3 tweets about Grime in the whole history of that. Why am I, with all I've done and all I've given, wasting my time arguing with you about this? Why are we responding to people that have a cursory opinion? Because Twitter obviously is set up so you can just throw out your opinion, innit? Like, you got an opinion, I'll read it, I'll throw out my opinion, and in my mind we're size, innit? Because, oh, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. This is my opinion and that's your opinion. Then not everyone's opinion size, bruv, unfortunately.
What is it even? Like, do you know what I look at Twitter as now? Why? And it doesn't mean I won't ever get. I might get triggered again in life. I'm a human being. I'm not perfect. I'm gonna make mistakes. But one thing I will tell you, Twitter to me is just like a massive building. There's like 1,000 rooms, and we've all got a room. And in our room, we've just got some of our friends. And then 10,000 people come into this building. And they just determine, and they just decide what room they want to go on. Based upon what that person's saying. And it's like we're all just shouting loads of different things, hoping more people come into our room.
Yeah.
But even if we filled up our whole room, essentially, what is our whole fucking purpose for giving out this information? Like, what's our objective?
Why would having a mad filled up room be something that we'd want as well?
If we filled up the room for being ourselves,
that
means that's a room full of love. So there is some benefits to this. If I just was sat in this room and all I'd done was just spoke to my friends about some real shit, if that room gets filled with 100 people and another man's got 100,000 people in his room because he's popular and he chats shit, like 6ix9ine, for example, my room's more valuable.
Yeah.
Your room could leave. Your room's full of insecurity. Your room's full of drama. Your room's full of problems. I don't want to be in that room. You see the room that I'm in? It may not be as popular as your room, but I tell you what, there's a bag of love in my room, and that's just like Filthy Fellas. Like, 60,000 views every week.
Yeah.
We may not be getting 1 million views like some people, but I tell you what, that 60,000 people, I wouldn't trade them for the fucking world, mate.
So one of the things that I was really, really thankful for as well from, like, what happened to me was the handful, and it was literally only a handful, the handful of people that I didn't know, strangers, that took the time to speak to me like with some sort of thought. And, you know, it's very easy to jump on Twitter and like pass your judgment, innit? You know what I mean? And we all do it. We've all done it. This person's done this thing. Oh my God, this is fucked. Or I can't believe this. I was very, very thankful for the handful of people that I had very insightful conversations with that educated me, enlightened me. Not that, oh yeah, I think it's fine to be making jokes about domestic violence. There's not a problem. I think it's fine to be making jokes about how everyone's music video girls all look the same. Or, you know, I think that's all. I know it's not fine. I know that's misogynistic or ignorant or whatever. But I was like, oh, it's not that bad. But I learned and got an insight into experiences that I have not experienced myself. Or been around, because again, like 90% of the lens through which I've been blessed to understand British black life and culture is male. I'm in a grime scene. I've learned so much wonderful things about culture, the experience, the benefits that this country has seen from all the cultures that come in. And how fucked up this country can be towards people like yourself. But 90% of that is from men. And it probably took what I experienced to kind of really, I kind of took that for granted, because I'm a man and this is a patriarchy. Do you know what I mean? The country, the world is set up to be beneficial to men. So it's easy to overlook like women's experiences. And I'm very grateful and thankful that I was able to speak to some complete strangers that messaged me, you know, with respect and with a view to educate as well.
I was happy for everything. The abuse, the education, everything, man.
There's nothing comes of abuse though.
Do you know what it does?
There's no growth from abuse.
There is growth for me, man. A lot of growth for me. Yeah, because, mate, that is the world we live in. It's not all roses.
Yeah, I suppose growth. Trauma. Growth comes from trauma, I said. Yeah.
It's like, it's not always going to be nice. Like, people have an obsession with being loved and an obsession of being liked and being appreciated and being popular. And that's just not life. I have an obsession with life. A proper obsession with life and obsession with people. I find them so interesting, and I find life even more interesting. And it's just like, bro, like, shit, new stuff's happening every day. Don't think you know it all. Take it in your stride, and don't take it too serious, and maintain respect. Like, you'll be fine. Like, all this shit we worry about, it don't even matter. Twitter, like, bro, this is how easy it is to get rid of a problem on Twitter. That's it. And it's done now. And now I'm back in real life. On Twitter, I can be an absolute prick, arsehole, cunt. I can be what I want. When I shut down this laptop, I've got electricity.
Fucking hell.
And do you know what? They're entitled to be. They're allowed. Do what you want. It's not my problem.
What do you think about some of the abuse that, like, footballers, for example, very famously recently,
yeah,
like, publicly, people are seeing it now, like, Tammy Abrams misses a penalty in the Super Cup final. Disgusting stuff on his timeline.
I don't know how to feel. Imagine, I mean, how do you feel when everyone says Graham is popular in 2014? How does that make you feel? You've been there for, they say Graham's good. In 2014, 2015, you're hearing, oh, Graham's really good. And you're thinking to yourself, it's been good forever. And only now that you're saying it's good.
I take it that it's in a place where people are more aware of its existence. Grime's something that's been around for, like, you know, since 2001, 2002. And anyone that's like 30 and younger, grime's effectively been there the entirety of their aware music listening, your active music listening life, right? So it's part of everyone's culture. Whether you're into it now, whether you're into drill, whether you're into, I listen to grown music now. I like soul, neo-soul and R&B. Yeah, but when you were 16, you were listening to pirate radio. Like, you know what I mean? Like, those sort of people. Whether you're now an exec, like Austin, exec, Apple, you know, been at bare different places, but you've grown up with grime as a culture, incredibly powerful person, and you're in you're in touch and connected with the culture.
Can't get through to him though.
Grime's part of everyone's DNA now, I feel, in this country. Like whether you're actively involved or you're passively aware of it. So when I start seeing people go, yeah, man, grime's popping right now. Or, yeah, I like it. Grime's good or whatever. You're either someone that didn't experience it before and this is a new thing and you've discovered it. That's fucking wonderful. Like, you can now share the joy that I have had with this music. You've just discovered this new joyful thing. Brilliant. Or you're someone that used to be into it, found something else that you're into, and now grime's made enough noise over here for you to go, oh, yeah, I remember grime. Yeah, that was sick. Brilliant as well.
For me,
I don't see
any
benefit from, like, yeah. Let me see your point.
Yeah, I mean, I asked you that because it was like, racism in football has been happening for as long as I can remember.
Of course.
So now that, because it's on Twitter, we should do something about it. Although maybe I shouldn't feel like this, I'm just like, I don't want to be a part of your campaigns anymore.
Mm.
I don't want to be a part of it. Because when something becomes press, when something becomes public, and too much people are involved, it loses its core values with most things. So racism in football is a bad thing because it's a way of causing segregation and promoting hatred within a sport which is brought to bring people together. That's one of the things that will separate it. That's bad. It's always been here. So why does it take for you to see it on Twitter to see it's bad? Like, this is bad. Like, Peter Beardsley was really calling people, you taking people to Planet Ape, saying to the young black players, the under-23s at Newcastle, oh, you'll be good at this. And John Barnes is really coming out and saying, almost defending it. Like, this is weird to me. So when people say to me, oh, is it really bad what's happening today? I just don't want to be involved more time. Like, when people ask me about, oh, can you come and do this talk? I'm like, no. No, it's all right.
The thing with social media, though, and racism is it's... Before, you suffer from a live crowd, you know, and, you know, you can go back to the 60s, 70s, Cyril Regis.
Laurie Cunningham.
Yeah, going back to, like, people throwing bananas on the pitch, which they fucking still do in other European countries. And
in England.
Here as well. Yeah.
England's the worst, believe me.
But now people can beam that directly to your phone when you're clocked out of work.
But this has been happening. This is what's so crazy to me.
You know what I mean?
But it's been happening. Like, what's so crazy to me is that 2012, football isn't cool.
Yeah.
That means me being a black boy speaking about football, I'm part of a minority.
Yeah.
That means anything that I'm going through doesn't mean anything because I'm a minority.
Yeah.
There's no money in it. So 2 years into me having this situation, I'm seeing Raheem Sterling go through racial abuse because of his last funny year at Liverpool. And I'm like, this ain't right. And everyone's talking about that he's not playing well. But I'm like, but he's being racially abused. He's being played in various different positions. I feel like he's being used. He's being mistreated publicly by the media, and I don't know why. And the only thing that makes me say it is because he's black, bro. Like,
yeah,
he's buying his bird a house, his mum a house, and it's a problem. Bruv, he's with a girl.
Is he flash or is he cheap? Like,
but this has been a problem.
That was mad, right? Because like you're bringing up like, you know, Raheem Sterling pops into Poundland or whatever the shop was.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, Raheem Sterling splashes out on this for...
But this is what's so crazy.
Like, what is it?
The public...
The only thing that links it is the fact that he's a young black boy and you don't like him.
Now, the public are going through so much problems in their own fucking life. They haven't even got time to suss all this shit out.
Yeah.
So when the media says Raheem Sterling's this, everyone just jumps on it.
Yeah, that's
and
what
then same fucking wankers are on TV now defending the boy.
Yeah.
The whole thing is trash because now Raheem Sterling... AD, Shah AD, these geniuses have proven that this guy was being victimized. Now, supporting young black people has become popular. Look what happened to Tammy. We've got to support him. Look, bruv, seriously, you lot, kiss my ass. When Rio Ferdinand and Anton Ferdinand were not wearing kick it out tops on Match of the Day in 2000 and God knows whatever, when racism was actually happening. Yeah. He said on this podcast, on this sofa, that Kick It Out didn't even want to walk with him into court to support the situation. Ashley Cole is defending Jonathan Terry. And this is just normal. It took 365 days to punish John Terry for racial abuse. And this is just cool. But now in 2019, because on Twitter we can see it and now we can't avoid it, let's create this new agenda where we're supporting young. It's built off nonsense. I don't want to be a part of it. Mm. I want you to do this because you care. That means if only 10 people are affected, we are still going to do it because this is a problem. Not because now this is damaging the credibility of our country.
This is what everyone's talking about, so we need to do it now.
Trash, bro. You lot are absolute trash. Every all the media is just trash, bro. Everything I've saying is documented. I'm not lying. I don't like to lie. You can go back and see the support from me and Vooj of Raheem Sterling very early. We noticed the bullshit. And now everyone's trying to do this whole, look how much black people are on TV now. Look at Match of the Day X. It looks like a bag of Timberland boots. Like, everyone's black now on TV. Everyone's black and involved in sport because there's now quotas that you need to set up. Like, everyone cussed me for this women in football thing. Now there's loads of women in football. No one cares about this stuff. They're just doing it to fit quotas, and that stuff infuriates me. Infuriates me, bro. Like, don't get black people involved just to fit quotas. Just leave us alone then, cuz. I don't want to be involved. And I'm not even one of them, like proper activists for black. Right? I'm not that guy. I just chill. I'm cool. But I'm not going to deal with bollocks. The same way people are just trying to put women any place in football. Listen, respect the women's game, bro. Like, respect the women's game. Let it grow at a rate that will be right for the women's game. Like, get the right people involved to take care of it, to let it flourish, to let it grow. Stop trying to monopolize on it and make money. That's all that the media does. Has agendas. Definitely. And this new racism one, I can't lie to you, I'm not with it. Anything that happens racially, bruv, I don't even want to be involved in it, fam. Like, it's quite obvious what the problems are, but we ignore it. And then one thing I hate about England is it tries to act like it's innocent. It creates this narrative about Russia. I had a fucking great time, Logan, in Russia. A great time. And do you know why I experienced racism? Because they said, you're English. They didn't care that I was black. They had nothing to do. Like, we hate the English. He was very clear about what he didn't like. Very clear. He's like, go back to your country. I was like, where? He goes, England. We hate the English. He didn't care about my heritage. He didn't do what in this country, throw bananas. Bro, he said, go back to England. Not go back to Africa. No. He said, go back to England. I don't even know if that's racist. I don't know what the hell that is. But what I will tell you is what happens within this country is too consistently there's racist abuse. A banana skin was thrown at Aubameyang last year in the North London Derby.
Yeah.
This is a joke. But this country wants to talk about other countries.
The fines are mad as well. Like, the punishment for proven racism to clubs is crazy. I don't understand it.
It's just, I just,
like, you can get fined more for, like, wearing the wrong colour kit than your fans doing an absolute mad thing.
Because no one cares. Like, all the people involved in football at a high level are very old, when a lot of the terminologies they used to communicate with young black people at the time was considered banter, which is now, they've grown at a time where they've seen their banter become racial abuse, and they don't want to accept it. So because they don't want to accept it, it keeps this situation where it is right now. That's why I'm just like, half of these people, fam, they're all wankers, fam. Like,
that's the thing with privilege. Like, you need to look at yourself in the mirror and recognize that it's privilege. Do you know what I mean? And that's really hard for a lot of people to do, because they feel like it diminishes what they've achieved.
It's when nonsense.
Like, it is definitely part of what you've achieved. But I don't feel like acknowledging privilege diminishes in any way. But a lot of people do, and that's why they react really defensively when you kind of bring up stuff or talk about the system that we're operating in. People are mad defensive about it.
People have agendas, and when you know, like, I go into a situation clean-hearted. So if you accuse me of something, I'll never go mad, because I'll just be like, well, you've read the situation wrong. And I have no problem with that, because I read things wrong all the time. So I can understand that you've read it wrong. It's up for me to now tell you and then display what I'm doing. I have no problem doing that, because I don't have to worry about anything. One thing I've noticed about liars, they've always got their back against the wall. Because they have an agenda and they have a secret, or they have something that they don't want someone to find out. I can genuinely tell you, like, I don't really have an agenda. I don't have an agenda. My only agenda is to make everyone just be cool and, like, get along, and we can just do cool stuff, make money, take care of our families, be good people. Like, that's my agenda. It doesn't really benefit me solely, but it benefits me as well. Loads of people's agendas are very selfish. And
do you know why it benefits you? Because you genuinely love what you do.
I love it, man.
And, like,
I love it.
When cool shit happens, that's what, like, so I'm a grime DJ. I run a label in grime. Like, I financially benefit from the success of grime. I'm a grime fan, though. So when people make sick tunes, I'm happy because I get to hear sick tunes.
Bruv, when I see anything from, you know, I think grime is bigger than, like, 140 BPM and, like, some underground rave where, like, we shouldn't be. And it's bigger than that. Like, it's a rebellious culture, which means that everything I see from today is a product of grime. Like, most things I see today is a product of grime. I'm a product of grime talking about football, bro. But the slang in which I use is the slang in which I've grown up within an environment which was predominantly based and grown and was worth anything because of grime. We all done grime. And those are still the people that I talk to now. And most of the things started becoming cool when we made grime. When people were rapping, it weren't that cool, my brother. When grime came into the equation, grime was cool as fuck. People can't tell me Kano wasn't cool. He was the coolest, bro. He was the fucking coolest. No one was touching him. Nobody. He was too good. So it's like, now, if I've been inspired and I've done my own career off that, I've been inspired by grime.
Yeah.
There's footballers that are probably inspired by grime. That means
and
grime
is... And that's why when I say it's in the DNA now...
It's in the DNA, bro.
Wherever you go, wherever you operate, whether it is in the music industry at the top, you know, whether it's in the music industry getting in at the bottom, whether it's in sports, news, the media, you know, grime, the music, our honest culture, council estate culture, Black British culture... It's one of the things that I love about this country. There's a lot of things to hate about this country, but...
I love that.
One of the things that you can say that I genuinely... And that's why I love grime so much as well. It's just a big melting pot of all things that are Nang. And I try and focus on that if I can.
Do you know one of the best things to come from grime? And I genuinely mean this. The best people to ever come from grime. And he's someone I really look up to. And... I respect wholeheartedly, and I slightly look at him as, like, you know what, because if I can be half the man you are, I've had a good life. J2K,
yeah,
he's one of the best things to ever come from grime, because, and this is why I say it's bigger than what it is. No one can ever say he's not certified in grime. He's Roman Road. He's so certified in grime.
Super.
But he went and made Crep Protect. He called it Crep. Crep is the terminology that we used every day in grime. Yeah. He's now brought that to a trainer cleaners.
And I walked into a Foot Locker in Seoul, Korea.
And where was it? In Seoul, Korea?
Yeah.
Bro, I saw DJ
went into,
Khaled.
I went into Atmos. Do you know Atmos? In Tokyo. Atmos is a super, super famous sneaker store in Tokyo. Like, it's been linked to sneaker culture for decades.
Decades, okay. Yeah?
Done bare collabs with Nike. Went in there to try and pick some next one away tracksuit up. What do I see? Crept.
That's grime. And if
I take pictures and send him every time I go to, and he must get bored of it, but, like, yeah.
But Logan,
the novelty never wears off.
Never.
For me.
Never. When I'm in LA and I see it, I'm gassed.
Yeah.
Like, bro, I can't lie to you. I'm groupie-ish. Bro, that's my brethren, you know? What? Yeah, it's my brethren. My brethren made that. Like, I'm so proud. Like, fam, we grew up saying our brethren done fuckery, you know? Now I'm saying my brethren has a trainer cleaning product across the world. I'm sorry, bro. He's one of the best.
I am a firm believer in celebrating other people's success like it's your own, man. That's such good energy. I love putting that energy out there. When I see no matter how hard my life might have been for the last couple of years and, you know, whatever I'm going through and whatever, when I see people winning, it galvanizes me. I take something from that. So my way of thanking, the same way that, you know, you've seen Getz go out there and, you know, you feel indebted to him, even though he hasn't directly, but indirectly through what he's done and achieved, he's inspired. when I see people winning and succeeding that I know, I've seen their journey, I know what they've been through because I know them personally. Do you know what I mean? I love messaging people and saying, yo, Nang, winning, sick. Even people I don't even know that well, brother.
Same.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know Clara Amford that well. She was on the street team at KISS when I was working at KISS. Cool. She started doing voiceovers. Then she started doing presenting. Then she did a bit more presenting. Then she moved over to the BBC, started She's over there. Kept going up. Done one show the other day. Fucking sick, bro. Clara Amfo was on the sofa hosting the one show. Add that to the long fucking list of all the other things she's done.
She's lit.
What an like absolute champion she is. Do you know what I mean?
And you
Amazing.
Know what?
I love
There's
that.
A chance she probably listened to Graham as well. So it's just like, me personally, I'm nasty with it. I'm just claiming everything. The way hip-hop claims all of his exports and says, that's hip-hop, and builds this massive industry where hip-hop has a barbershop and hip-hop has a car show.
Yeah.
And like, Pimp My Ride. And I want that for Grime.
I suppose where like all the media mislabels every type of music as Grime. Like, that's how we should have spanned that. We should have spanned that the other way. Rather than arguing about what is and what isn't musically Grime, like, let's forget the music and run out everything else. All right, what, JD Sports has just made £1 billion off of selling tracksuits and fitted hats to people and crepes.
That's for the Grime.
Yeah, why is that? That's why. Because people weren't wearing tracksuits and Air Max everything.
Everyone was trying to look too flossy. Obviously, the scene's gone back that way, so it's whatever.
Yeah,
but
bro, people are still, bro, JD Sports are still quading, bro. So.
Bro, I've got a bag of tracksuits in my yard right now. My kids wear tracksuits. All of us. I've got two kids, by the way. We all wear tracksuits, fam. Like, everyone wears tracksuits, bro. Like, that's a massive part of the culture. First sport, if you know, you know. Like, JJB, if you're not, like, come on, bro, man. So I just feel like I love Grime so much, I'm never, ever going to restrict it to 140 BPM because I don't just do 140 BPM now. And I would say I'm a product of the world of Grime.
Bro, we didn't even get to talk about Vibber.
We can still talk about it.
Bro, we've been going for 2 hours. But
that's amazing. We can talk about it another time, man.
Yeah, we'll come back and talk to you, man, because I haven't spoken to you enough in my life.
That's lit. Thank you
so much. Do you know what's jokes?
Yeah.
I got cancelled out of the BBC. And I got an email saying, do you want to come on a show called Gasworks? And I was like, no! I definitely do not want to come on this show called Gasworks.
Because Alham will absolutely bring it up. 100%.
And you will.
And so will I.
Because you're a cheeky shit as well in 2017. And I'm not equipped to have that conversation with people that have no... Like, I'll happily talk to you about it now because you actually have some kind of like connection to the experience.
Yeah.
Whereas in 2017, that's just banter, bruv, really. Like, look what happened to you, white boy, racist.
Nah, but to be fair, it's whatever. Happened to me 3 times.
Yeah.
3 times and every
but
single...
But I won't come on the show, that's all.
Nah, I understand.
That's fine,
like
nothing
it.
Personal.
But don't worry, there is bare rappers that would never come on our show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's bare people that wouldn't come on our show for their own reasons, man.
Just because I felt like I wasn't equipped to talk about it in that way. In the irreverent way it would have been spoken about. But yeah, man, fuck it. It's all good. I got to speak to you now. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. You invited me into your home, which means a lot as well.
Yeah, come on, bro.
I'm sitting on the same sofa that certified legends have sat on.
Bro, that's weird to me.
And however, the two kids have been made on the sofa, probably, I don't know. But
yeah. Nah, they were made in Tunisia.
There's a couple of kids still on the sofa. Thank you for putting the blanket down.
Oh,
anyway.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Still. But it's all good, man. Thank you for your time.
Again, brother. God bless.
Love.
That is lit. That was such a
good Take care. Question.